Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The place where we have a lot of fun and cackle in the face of all the terrible things that are going on around us, much like Doctor Who. We're broadcasting from New Zealand, which is a nice, beautiful island-chained paradise with prime ministers and corporate takeovers and enormous treaties and what have you to basically ensnare the entire nation in the hangman's noose of globalisation. It is absolutely beautiful, picturesque, and everything in the forest is dead because we're the only country in the world that allows 1080 poison to be used outdoors. Incidentally, and my very special guest is Paul Webster today. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, sir. Mm-hmm. Glad to be here. Lots happening.
Yeah, I think we do have a very interesting dynamic when you talk about islands, and one island in particular that has been the result of much scumbaggery around the world is England in and of itself. Wouldn't you agree?
As I said before, you're welcome.
Now, it's not to say I don't appreciate it. I mean, after all, I wouldn't have an international listening audience if the British hadn't conquered them all and forced them to speak English. So I appreciate that. Thank you, bro.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. We don't need to sound arrogant, everybody who speaks English, but yeah, the English came up with it. What you gonna do? They also, incidentally, Sir Francis Bacon came up with the legal system. Now that has been shafting everybody through the court system for quite some hundreds of years, I take it. And Paul, you know a little bit about this, don't you?
Yes. Whether it's always been like this, or whether it has evolved, or it's taken a certain slant, I'm not sure. But from my experience of being inside this system for 5 years, where if you're going to talk about day, they're going to talk about night. If you're going to talk about black, they're going to talk about white. It's just a game of diversions. And it really is a role acting thing. And it's based around rules and regulations that don't apply to you. And they don't need to hear you. And when you start digging into this, you start realizing that the system's designed that way. You know, you're not meant to go in there and win. You're meant to go in there and lose. You're meant to go in as two negotiators. But there's no reason for you to actually be there. You know, they shouldn't be able to force this, but they've had this all their own way for so long, then it's turned to just childish behaviour. You know, you basically... I don't know if you've heard any of the Carl Lentz stuff, have you?
No, but I was going to say, it's kind of like Chinese whispers through the generations. Like one generation comes up with a real brilliant scam, but it just keeps getting dumber and dumber and dumber until there's absolutely nothing behind the scam at all. Just a childish game.
No, No, it's blatant. What has happened with me was blatant fraud. But straight up fraud. I've had property stolen by someone and been sold. And when I've addressed that in the court, as I was addressing a foreclosure where a bank was being told that they could foreclose on a property without evidencing the debt, that I put case law in front of that judge and the Parliamentary Commissioned report in front of that judge that backed that up. Now, that report said, Vinnie, 99% of all these bills are sold. Now, these bills are bills of exchange. They're what you create when you go for your mortgage. The bank facilitate your own credit. That's, they don't lend you anything. They facilitate your own credit. But you, in your terms and conditions, they take a power of attorney. That power of attorney is executed in your name. Now, what that really means is, if you, they claim you've borrowed $60,000 off them, you've just given them a document that they can execute to reduce their liability, i.e. because with the derivatives and interest that you could pay on that £60,000 loan, it could be worth, let's say, for argument's sake, $65,000 instead of $60,000. So they give you $60,000, right, even though we know they haven't given it you. So they facilitated. It's a bit like...
It's a middleman.
Yeah, it's a bit like I'd have your bank card with your PIN number and I know your bank, but you don't know anything about that. So you want 200 quid off me, out of your bank, so you have to ask me to get it you. That's basically what we do when we sign these terms and conditions. And I go and get you that £200 and I charge you an administration fee, a facilitation fee for that, and that's what I charge you interest on. I don't charge you interest on your own money. That would be a fraud, wouldn't it?
I've seen gangster movies where actual hitmen will do this to somebody. They'll just take something off you, like a loved one or a piece of furniture or something like that or whatever, and if you want it back, you've got to do such and such and do this for me.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works, isn't it?
It certainly does, and it's like I was just on a podcast earlier on at 8 o'clock, and I got to talking about how all this stuff is starting to come together as nobody is ahead of anybody else. Everybody seems to be attacking this all from so many different angles. You hear so many different arguments for the exact same outcome. And the exact same outcome is that at the end of the day, they've got two arguments when you're in a county court. They're either talking to the public figure or the private figure. If you go down the private argument route, they'll say, well, you can't sue the court, it's a building. You know, it's a building, so that would be the public route, because if you was to try and have a judicial review on a court building, that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? To have a review on a building. However, when you challenge the judge's decision and the judicial review, they talk about the private. You can't prosecute them. That's why it's the first class place to be if you want to be in the kind of game that they're in, you know. And I, you know, it's, you follow all the evidence that takes you there, and you're talking to them in plain English. And like I said, they brought this Carl Lentz stuff up into it because he's come out of the blue and he's dealing very direct with common law court. So he's going straight to Queen's Bench and he's got certain terminologies. Like, for instance, which I checked out a few law dictionaries to see what he was doing, and he claims he'd had all these law dictionaries and he checked them all for the definition of the term man. And in corporate law, there is no term for the definition of man other than adult male. So that could be an adult male dog, cat, chicken, wherever you know. So they can't use certain words in common law courts that are corporate because it's man on man. It should never mix. Even though there's an administrative side, basically what this guy claims, and he's got many people claiming posts on his site and on his radio show, all these recommendations of him. He told this woman who'd had four kids taken off her, she'd struggled with drink, she'd struggled with drugs, and she was trying to put her life back together, but they were putting conditions on her. to have these kids, which was like drug rehabilitation, even though she was claiming that, you know, she, in her position, she was doing all right, she didn't need to do this. Now, obviously, if it's common law, if the, that child's in danger, they can still monitor that child, they can still remove that child under common law if it's, you know, no harm, no loss. But what happens is they take that child away. Now, the child means person, and this is what he's touching on. So what he brings it right down to is these four kids are sent all over the province, and they want them back. He says to her, he says, if you don't do as I say, you will never see your kids again. Say what I say, and she wrote it down, and she put this into court, and they shit themselves. They come running out to her and said, who's helped you with this? Who's helped you with this? You've got them running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And what she'd said, basically, now, I've not had the time to study it completely, but from some stuff I'm picking up, it's basically along the lines of, you stand at a Queen's Bench, which is common law court, and you say, I, ma'am, require by right restoration of property. And those children are my property. You can call them children if you like, but they're my property. Because property is anything that is exclusive to you. And as you are co-creator of your children, is that not your property? Under common law, yes, it is. So he's going direct to this route. But we found in the system, Vinny, they hide Queen's Bench from the general public. They always guide you down to an appeal law, and it's always directed through county court. So you're continually always paying. So you're continually in the system. So even though you're giving them a fight, you're still paying for that fight.
It's rich man's justice.
Well, it's greed at the end of the day. That's what's brought this system down. Complete greed. They've spread the trough that big.
Can I say, it's almost as if they found the key to getting away with unlimited fraud, thievery, and scumbaggery is by owning the legal system and controlling the means in which people can actually resist and attempt to address this injustice.
Definitely. You control the money supply. He doesn't care who makes his laws, because the banks are going to pay the law society to write those laws. And who are those laws going to be in favour of? The banks. Can it be blatant? No, they decided they'd keep the knowledge away from the people. So when people using terminologies like, are you the driver of this vehicle? And they don't realise, because they've been sat in front of a steering wheel, and at school you're taught that you're driving if you're in that scenario, so you're the driver. But in commercial law, you're actually consenting to a certain regulation that is going to, could end up with giving you a fine. Mm. And they don't tell you that, and they don't train the police that that's what it is. I mean, Vinny, it's like I said to you last time, that I spoke to the Law Society and was bemused when they said that I'm not legally trained. Wasn't surprised, but I couldn't speak to anybody legally trained. Nobody will speak to me. I've just done 70 days in court with British Gas. I think I told you this last time, didn't I? Well, they applied for another warrant in January. So I went to the court, saw the agent, and I said, are you legally trained? She went, no, I'm not. I went, then I'm going to cross-examine you in this court, because I want to know why you, after 70 days from directions from a district judge, your legal team has not come up with anything, but yet you keep harassing me and threatening me to break into my house. And she went, no, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to cross-examine me, because I'm taking the application out now and withdrawing it. And I was invited into the court, and the legal advisor said, I didn't want you to just leave, Mr. Webster, without you being able to have your say. I went, oh, well, that's very... I said, you know what? You're the first honourable person that I've met in this establishment. And there was eruptions of laughter behind me from the gallery. It's as if people are going there and seeing this stuff happening now. You know, it's not about putting a big fight up. It's about, you get penned into a position, and it's like I said, I don't know many people who will actually I know some people who actually proactively wanted to get involved in this because they've been doing it for a long time, but the majority of people I know are in the same boat as I was, where it was fear that, you know, you find something out, but what can you do? Because you won't get anybody argue with you I mean, I could get people to argue over John F. Kennedy's assassination and 9/11 all day long, but there's some things that the public just accept, which is there's corruption in the judiciary, there's corruption in politics, there's corruption in the police, and there's corruption throughout that system, and there's corruption in the banks. Nobody will disagree with you. They'll all go, yeah, you're right. What time's X Factor on? Or, you know, stuff like that, which I was like, you know, don't get me wrong, I used to come home and watch Emmerdale, EastEnders, all that kind of stuff, which are all soaps that are played over here. And you'd get up and do work and do it all over again. So I do understand that, but when it comes knocking on your door and people are going to take something from you and you have researched and you know they have no right, you know they can't do it, but they're going to do it anyway, or they're going to harass you into mentally breaking down or leaving or attacking them even, giving them any excuses, because it's got to be a dirty game now. You know, it hasn't always been like this, but they're actually, you know, you can see it in America, that when I read several articles involving IQs of police officers, that they were only going to accept anything over 85 but under 100, because they were capable of carrying out orders but not critical thinking. And the odd ones that do critically think, they could weed out. Now, people could say that is a conspiracy theory. No, one of the blogs was written by a guy who, with credentials, who said he'd been turned down. He'd gone to court to get this job with the police force, and they wouldn't give it him, and it was thrown out of court. And it was based on the fact he had an IQ of 120. You know, it's all about lies and diversion, and people will not argue with you on those facts. They know that the system they live in, but it's like, as I was, you're just programmed, you're just constantly looking at the ground and thinking, what are you going to have to eat? What time do you have to be in work tomorrow? And do you have to be in early? You're constantly, I've got to put that washing on, I've got to do, you know, it's all everyday stuff. And then when you get the time, because we're obviously kept purposely busy, because if we were doing better, we wouldn't be working as hard and as many cuts. You know, I deal with lads who never stood a chance from backgrounds that were socially engineered. I can see that. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are still stuck in pull yourself up. You know, I did this, I did that. Everybody's got a different experience. But it's very easy to condemn somebody when you've got to be a big man to step out in certain situations. And when you're involved in gangs and stuff like that, and that's your life, that's where you've grown up, that's where you have to live, there's an own set of rules there, and you see a different side. You see a different side to life.
Mm. Well, every different kind of way of life is just another form of life, right? It's still life, yeah. Isn't it? And if you're destroying life, you're destroying life. A friend of mine said to me the other night, about police officers, don't they realise that every single time they bust anybody for anything, you actually destroy that person's life? And you need to destroy so many people's lives in such a short amount of time in order to get some recognition for your ability to destroy people's lives effectively? And that's how you get your brownie points, kind of thing? Or at least that's how he put it. The reality is somewhat different. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of people's encounters with police are not positive, nor lawful in many, many yeah. cases. Not all, of course. But the fact of the matter remains, the police in New Zealand, at least, still see themselves as the country's largest gang. And that's essentially what's going on. Now, I've been involved with real gangsters before, you know, met with them, talked with them during activism things that I was doing and what have you. And they're just like the police, really nice and friendly and what have you, but they can freaking kill you and get away with it.
Yeah. Well, see, where I live, where I come from, it's kind of a sleepy back working men's town. Do you know what I mean? It was all of this town grew up on pits and mills and stuff like that. So you've got honest people here. Do you know what I mean, Vinny? You've got honest people, and locally you do have honest people who do, so happen to be police constables. You have honest people, believe it or not, who are traffic wardens. And you have honest people who are solicitors, but the further you get into the inner cities and the further into the system, into the network, they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're not as... they're not as corruptible down at the bottom levels. You know, there's still some honest people there. I've had some positive encounters with coppers. I've encountered maybe one or two pricks.
Have you noticed, like I have, that the ones who tend to be real pricks are the ones with the highest rank?
Well, see, I've never been involved with anybody personally. And from my experience, the coppers who I met, they, when I was talking to them, they hadn't got a clue what I was talking about. But when I explained a bit to them, they understood it, but they're paying a mortgage. You know what I mean? But I'm on about, I know the type of blokes who put a uniform on and then, because I lack something in myself worth, I have to go and be better than somebody and will do something. I told you the story of the fellow with the mobile phone and he tried to get into contract to into a fine. What was the point to that? There was absolutely no point to it. Once he saw it in the drinks holder, he should have just gone, oh, I'm sorry to bother you, sir. I thought I just wanted to warn you that you shouldn't be on your phone. Boom, that would have been it. But no, obviously there was something that he needed either to tick a box, to, you know, get so much revenue in for a bonus. I don't know how they work it. But they employ certain types of people, and you've seen that certain temperament start to creep in. But like I said, it's more when you get to the inner cities. I mean, there's a lot of stuff around over here at the moment about the Metropolitan Police, good and bad, and deaths in custody, that's being talked about a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that one guy got shot in the head, and the police officer, this was 2 years ago, and the police officer has been found not guilty of manslaughter, and you don't understand. It's like...
Well, can I explain? Here's an illustration of your point there. I think 1,348 people in New Zealand have been killed by police in the line of duty since 1968. Guess how many police have ever been prosecuted or fired because of it? Zero.
I was going to say, I'd go for zero. It's
the same system, isn't it?
But you see it throughout. The system now is stretched into management of all kinds. You know, you've got management teams that have come in with an agenda, and basically they're just politicians. You hear the same rhetoric. In the new world and stuff like that, it's the same rhetoric. The stuff doesn't work because the resources aren't there, and the lack of resources are a myth. We're being robbed. That's why. There's not lack of resources. If anything, we're heading towards where we've got a lack of skills. You know, because...
A lack of intelligence.
I'm certainly not a skilled worker. I'm a bit of a jack-of-all-trades. I can do bits and bats. I start skirting boards and don't finish them and things like that. But, you know, I know people who are draftsmen. I know people who are engineers. I know people who can, you know, make a car out of nothing or make an engine out of nothing. We're running short on people who are like that because of the lack of opportunities. And then we just listen to absolute bollocks and rhetoric of people who aren't in a position to help you, even if they wanted to. Because these people get into prominent... You don't get into any prominent positions these days if you're not in with the agenda. As simple as that. You know, and when you've gone through all the research about how these laws have been brought in and how they affect us, and you're indoctrinated into giving certain pieces of information at certain times, and that you call that life because that's what you're taught. Well, that's like voting for Labour. Why? Because my dad did. That's not good enough anymore. It really isn't. I really do wish it was, because I miss just worrying about going out for a pint and watching football. That I miss that. Those were my two main worries. I hope I finish work early enough so I can watch footy tonight. And, you know, if it was like that, that would be a rest.
It would be nice.
Eh?
It would be nice, you know, if life was fun, if you know, you step out your door and you don't suddenly see all this legal scumbaggery all around you and all of this taxation and basically, I don't know what it's like for other people, but for me, everywhere you look, there's something that you hate and you want to change, but you can't change it all at once.
No. Well, when I stopped trying to convince people of this stuff, I found myself in a lot better place. Because, like,
it's depressing because they don't listen.
It is. But I've seen a deep end of the spectrum. Really, I had one of the first meetings I ever tried to hold in my local. A lad came along, and he was a self-employed lad. He bought this house himself. He'd done it all up. It'd taken him 2 years, and it was perfect. And he got with this girl, and you know. Things happen, and she decided she wanted half of his house now. And she was with him for 8 months. So he went to court, he got fleeced with the solicitors, they took everything off him. He got very depressed about it, ended up drinking a lot, and then he got into a relationship that was exactly the same toxicity as the other one. Because when you're in a bad place like that, that's what you're going to attract. And he ended up putting a pipe in his van and, you know, taking himself out. And he argued with me all night, Vinny, that black was white, about that banks must make money because they're a business. They must make money. It's, you know, that's what it's about. It's about making money. And he couldn't grasp the fact, even though he'd been through the system, he couldn't grasp the fact that the system, you know, the system, the tables are tilted. The dice are loaded.
Well, what is money? You know, the business's purpose is to make money. Okay, what's money? Money's nothing. Okay?
Exactly. They make it very well, though.
I know, it's like I'm making nothing. It's like people who play computer games and brag about their high scores when the reality is they actually just spent 17 hours playing that game to accomplish nothing.
Well, that's self-satisfaction, isn't it? But exactly, this is what they do. It is self-satisfaction on behalf of how they do it.
It's kind of like a dog, you know. Here's your reward for this, and with a little clicker and what have you. You train people like a dog to see the money as their reward for obeying their master.
Yeah, but people find it hard to get their head around the possibility, shall we say? Because I would say it's 99% fact, and Domestos can't beat 99% fact. You know, it's
for me, the asbestos.
It's the system when it comes to. I've lost track of what I was saying about the money. Then
how money's not worth anything, and as there's no actual real achievement, it's just energy. Yeah,
that's basically it. But what they've done is, through that birth certificate and the bankruptcy of this country, they signed us on, and I'm presuming that this is what because it's the same system, Vinny, you've been signed on to something through a registration. And that was meant to actually work for you, because you are meant to have an ensure, like Great Britain, we're meant to be under austerity cuts. I've seen several articles referring to the office statistics stating that Great Britain's credit, I don't know what year this was worth $23 trillion. Now, as a registered citizen, my company is entitled to a 67th millionth, out 70 million of people in this country, if registered, are meant to have an entitlement of credit. Where else does my credit come from? It comes from the credit account that I'm floated on the stock exchange every day, because this system treats you as a stock. You are stock at value. That is it. Because this system is based on our labour. It's a prepaid account. That's why your gas, water and electric are all free to a domestic property. If it's a commercial agreement, of course you're liable, because corporations pay the infrastructure. They pay the rates for the infrastructure. That's how it's meant to work. But if it's ever been like that, we've lost track of it, and it's been manipulated, and through being taught what in my terminology, would be grammar, and you're taught to use Mr. You know, I remember my mum was very good at English, and she said, you put Mr. because of this, but you put the capital letter P, and you do all this, and this is how you write a letter. Put the address over here. Well, putting the address over here puts you in the debtor's position. So my mum knew how to write a letter, but it's only what she was told. She didn't understand the meaning of why you'd use Mr., why you'd use the capital letters, why addresses are in certain parts of this letter. Because you just never think of questioning it. And neither would I. But once you start looking into it, you see how devious. If not, I mean, if you can't prove fraud in this, what you can definitely prove is the fact there is some kind of secrecy going on about terminology and language, but what they say is ignorance of the law is no excuse. So the information's there. If you don't know it, tough. That's what they say.
Yeah. Here's the rule book. Boom! And if you don't read every single bit of it, we can screw you in some way. But if you don't read all that old book, you know, it's no excuse.
And, the fact is, if you don't go into that rule book, the very blatant fact is they cannot do anything to you. But they do. And they do it through using police. They do it through using private bailiffs. They do it through fines. They do it through making you pay the costs.
Henchmen and goons.
Yeah. It's become so blatant now because it's so far down the line. It's like everything is running out of steam. You see economies collapsing all over the world. I don't do coincidences, Vinny. I have to go and find some information. And, you know, whatever is left after all the investigation, however improbable, even the impossible must be the truth. And the fact is that there's so much going on. I can't research the information fast enough as it's coming in now. Because, you know, I'm getting stuff from all over the world through to me that I'm picking up with. And everything is, they're onto everything. The Ukraine, they broke into the administrative building. They challenged the police in the administrative building. And it was promoted as the police get beaten. You know, that this angry crowd was beating them. Yet I saw evidence of these half a dozen trapped coppers down the side of these stairs. And they were that tired fighting with these people. Somebody just leaned over and took the shield off them dead gentle. But then started dragging them. You know, because it was like, he went gentle because he didn't want to get hurt, so he's like just pulling at it to see if he'll let it go. So then he could see he was knackered, and he just one quick tug and he was gone. Then they just piled in, and instead of beating them, they were dragging them and directing them out of the building. So the beef is not with the police, and I think the reason, I mean, some idiot American has said that the Americans wouldn't put up with this riot. They would use deadly force on their own citizens. So now you start to see, if that's coming out now, that this fella's saying that, now you see where the 2.5 billion rounds of hollow point ammunition and the 2,000 tanks are going, and the FEMA camps, that is all mainstream news. You know, the fact that you don't know what a FEMA camp is anymore isn't a good enough excuse. Mm-hmm. You can't put it down to ignorance.
I'd love the big billboard. Ignorance of FEMA camps is no excuse.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, man. And the way they're putting it to the people now is, I mean, I've just been watching these people at the Super Bowl, and they're just jumping about and shouting, yeah, woo, USA, and all this kind of stuff. And I've seen them, those kind of people, ask questions. Somebody thought that President Kennedy only just passed away 3 days ago. Interview. You know, because he's asking, what do you think about the legacy that he left? And he couldn't answer him, because he didn't know. And these are questions that I certainly take for granted. You know, I had a mum and dad who had a lot of interest in news and stuff like that. I had to watch the news when I was a kid. you know, even though I didn't want to, I had to, because they all, that's where they got the information from. And then when you realise just the difference between the information that is accessible now to what information was accessible then, you can see how easy it's been for them. You know, the internet was never designed for us to use. It was designed to take stuff from us, which, in fairness, you can see all the mainstream now, the NSA stuff and the GCHQ. It's rife everywhere. The watching, monitoring, everything. And it's
including the Vinnie Eastwood show. I want to welcome all the agents and surveillors and various other assorted scum to the show. We're just kidding. Sure. I know you're just doing your job and you're trying to protect your country from terrorists and what have you, but bear in mind, the terrorists are actually your employers, not the people your employers tell you to watch. Okay?
The thing is, they want to be these people who think that they are getting themselves on a winning team that's going to achieve something, that these people are as expendable as everybody else.
In fact, that's the first thing that happens whenever there's a huge dictatorship takeover. You have a look at what happened when Hitler took over Germany. Allegedly, he took out his entire cabinet days after the takeover. And because that's the thing, if you help the system get itself into place and you're a participant in the lie and the fraud, it means you contain information that can bring the lie and the fraud down from within and without, so they can't allow you to live. Okay, so if you're working in the current industry right now and you're helping them to bring their current surveillance state into power, you have certain information which can and probably will get you killed. Stop doing it.
Yes.
Start fighting against it rather than for it. Okay? You're not going to save your country or yourself. You're going to die. And most of your countrymen are going to die because of what you're doing, because of what you're not stopping yourself from doing.
Yeah.
That's the reality. It's pretty sad.
It is.
But everybody has to come to this realization in their own time, I think. You know,
exactly.
you keep your head down and you work real hard and you try to do the right thing until you realize at such a point that whatever you're doing has been the wrong thing all along and the right thing's been right in front of you, knocking you in the face your entire life, but you never open the door.
No, shit's going down right now. This is history. People have lived through this through generations. You know, that people actually lived through World War II. People find it hard to envisage that kind of a life now. But it could be on the doorstep. Mm-hmm. And it is that close. And people will start thinking you're being a scaremonger. Especially when, in my town, you open the curtains and there's nothing there. You know, there's not even a man walking a dog. So people don't understand how close it could be to a complete disaster. And for the people who are in the system, who are just paying the bills and doing the orders and that, if they stick with the system, not only will we take everything down, but when it comes to it, we're going to be having Nuremberg-style trials. And you know what they said when they said, well, I was following orders? That's not good enough.
No.
It's just not good enough. So how have we managed to be so stupid to get ourselves in a position like that again when it was blatantly done in World War II? Everybody can see that evidence, how it worked, how they did it.
Well,
setting fire to their own
parliament building,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's happened before over and over and over and over again. I mean, the whole course of history, I think, I forget who said this, but you're never more than two generations between freedom and slavery of your entire peoples.
Definitely. Well, it's like I said, the two generations before me, we had two manufactured world wars, two wars that didn't need to happen. Mm. And they were paid for on both sides by the same parties. Now, how I look at it is, if you bomb the shit out of generations for long enough, they'll accept anything. I always remember my mum getting extra rations of chocolate in 1943 after a particularly bad bomb run. And they were ecstatic. They thought the government was looking after them, this, that, you know. And people get suckered in because they get whipped up into a frenzy with patriotism and all this. And it's just tribalism at the end of the day. It's people who aren't prepared to take a bit of responsibility and look at a bigger picture, because the person who can't take that responsibility. He'll never be as powerful as he is, he, she is.
I was just thinking about that, as you're saying, it is tribalism, but what they've done is they've expanded that that individual communal kind of feeling of tribalism, where you actually have a community that you're looking out for and are part of, and they've blown it out of proportion so that it's a country with all of these millions of people that you belong to and are part of. But the reality is you aren't. You'll never meet most of those people. You'll never have a conversation with them. You'll never do business with them. Your community, on the other hand, they're people who you will see and meet and talk to and do business with on a daily basis, more or less. That's where tribalism should end. Anything beyond that, you're simply getting involved with a tribe that is larger than you, and any tribe that is larger than any of the sum of the entire tribe doesn't actually care about anyone in it.
No. No. It's, for me, it's, you hear all these things that are coming together. At the moment, we're they're talking about unions over here. They're a bit like the old cooperatives, where they were, local communities would provide local amenities, so local farmers would actually grow stuff instead of accepting government payouts to not grow anything, because that, you know, the fact is that we waste too much food as it is. So it's all, this is consumer led, and if the consumers don't wake up and just carry on, it's like a snake eating its own tail at the minute. You know, at some point the snake's going to realise, oh shit, that's it. There's nothing left, I'm dead. You know, there's going to be a realisation, but all I can say is there seems to be so much happening right now. People are getting so awake with this stuff. We are reaching that critical mass. The dam's broken. The judiciary is. It's like going into a dark room. You take one torch in, you can see a little bit, but that torch can always go out and then you're knackered. But the more people with torches in that room, sooner or later, you don't need any more people with torches, because it becomes generally known what is in that room. And the fact is, the torches are all lit, the room's illuminated, the roaches, the cockroaches are just running like mad now, trying to take what they can and get back into the crooks and crannies without facing any kind of recourse. Mm. And you see it from the lower levels. Like I said, the judiciary, politics and the police have got far, far, far bigger problems than me.
You know what I was thinking about? The other day is, when you bust somebody for a crime, there's always certain levels of that crime. You know, like, let's say theft, for example. Somebody snatches a lady's handbag that has $100 in it, okay? Guy gets 6 years. Some guy snatches $100 million of people's investment money by signing a false statement or something like that. The guy gets 6 months, 3 months for good behavior, you know? Certainly, there's no proportional punishment to the crime occurring here. And what I was thinking about is, you know, what would happen is, if you busted one person who would steal $100 million, it's as good as busting 10 million people who stole 100. So why not have a very specific function to just let all the little offenders go, but make sure you only really focus on the big offenders, the ones who are actually doing a huge quantity of damage? Because if you're taking out singular individuals who are responsible for large quantities of scumbaggery, then the entire apparatus and the chains of people for which they influence down the line also get disrupted. The problem comes when people try to rise and take their place.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the company can always blame the man, because they can't legislate for a man's own individual decision. So what they do is they'll flip that to common law court. So they won't hear you. They don't hear any legislation, no civil stuff in that. So,
but like you said, Nuremberg trials kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And this flipping of jurisdiction is, they're either going to go down the public route or the private route. In a county court, if they claim that they're in a private, if I said that as a public figure, you are answerable as a judge to judicial review, there is nothing in the civil procedure rules that states judicial review is a last resort only. There's no civil procedure rule that says you must appeal, then judicial review. It's either judicial review or appeal. If you appeal, you have to provide the burden of evidence. If you go judicial review, you say, these are the decisions that I believe is wrong. This is what my grounds on why I base that. Now the burden of proof is on them. That's why they don't like you getting to Queen's Bench. It's for them only, Vinny. That's why they want you to keep going the appeal. You've got to go back to county court. We don't deal with that here. It's not for us. We're not common people. We aren't under common law. We are stock at value. That's how they treat us.
Yeah. Well, could you imagine a cow trying to take the farmer to court for trying to kill him?
You can't work it out, can you? How mad it is.
Maybe we've got mad cow disease or something. In fact, I heard a joke the other day. There's these two cows standing in a field, and one cow says to the other, "Man, I'm really worried about that mad cow disease." The other cow says, "I'm not worried. I'm a helicopter."
Oh, man, was a tractor the one I saw. Do you know what, though, then? If you didn't laugh at this stuff, you know, if you can't get to a place where you can laugh at this stuff, it would literally drive you crazy. The amount of times...
How many times have you seen people like that, eh? They know the same things we know, but they don't laugh at it, and they become paranoid and crazy, antisocial. It's terrible. So you know, like, in fact, you've just touched on the entire point of this radio show, bro. Really.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we're discussing, what information or anything like that, whether we're discussing UFOs or reptilians or chemtrails or legal fictions or anything. Doesn't matter. The whole point of the show is to laugh while talking about them.
Well, that's the point. You've got to look at this information. There is many a golden nugget found in many a massive conspiracy, actual theory type thing. If people want to, people take the mick and start saying, "Well, have you been looking at any UFOs lately?" Yeah, I've looked at UFOs. I can't find anything definitive for or against, but it's information at the end of the day. It's something, it's a bit more knowledge that I didn't know the day before. And if it's not about putting knowledge in and experiencing something outside your normal comfort zone, because it's a difficult thing to do. Some people don't have the choice. Some people have their comfort zone shattered into pieces. And I see these people and they're broken. I've been there, Vinny. I've been sat on my ass with my face in my hands. With the dog nosing my hands out of the way, saying, "I'm here, Dad." You know, all that kind of stuff. All that stuff goes through your mind. And you start thinking, "Am I losing my mind here?" The amount of times I've had a conversation in the bathroom mirror going, wow, are you really on to this? Yeah. Are you sure about this? You know, and you can only deal with what information's in front of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it quacks like a duck, looks like a duck, I'm going to call it a cat just because it might make me feel a bit uncomfortable. I can't do that to myself. You know, I've never been able to. I'm the type of person, if you have an argument with someone, I want to sort it out there and then. Even if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, I'll sit up, and because I don't want to go to bed with bad blood. It's not in my nature. I like to know that there's nothing like that. I mean, obviously, you have arguments with that assholes, you know, but the people that you care about, it's you argue and argue and argue. I can't think I'm wrong, just because it'll make that other person right. I've got to have my argument to put it across.
I kind of treat it like a religion, you know? Like, what was it? Thomas Paine said, "My family is my country and my religion is truth."
Yeah, that's it. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think you can go too far wrong with a bit more love and a hell of a lot more truth in this world.
Yeah.
I don't think you can go wrong. And the fact that they're fighting so hard, I mean, in my particular case, they are fighting so hard to keep this out of court now because I've got him on fraud.
Mm.
I've got him on fraud. Blatant and utter fraud. And the fact is, if they put it on record in the court, he's done. He's toasted himself, so he can't go to court. But they're trying to get it through a county court, which will make me now, because I put in a variation order last week. Now, it takes 3 days to process an order, an application. I've still not heard until the solicitor who I'm involved with has sent me another copy of application for another hearing without... another judgment without hearing. So what they want, what I've got to do now is put a variation order, a set-aside order in. So, but they're pushing me into their system to keep paying. That's all it's about. But they know that people are switched on to them.
Yeah. I love the irony of it, you know. They give you plenty of hearings, but they never listen to you.
They don't have to. That's the point.
You know, the whole point of a hearing is that they don't have to listen to you. Is exactly. that right?
That's how childish this is. Yeah. That is how childish this has got. I mean, like I said, I've seen a grown man reduced to the actions of a five-year-old because I asked him, where do you get your authority from in this setting, in this court? If it isn't with my consent, where do you get it from? And he shuffled some papers in front of me and said, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. And how can you actually ever sort anything out if you're doing that? You would never sort anything out. And the fact is, they can't talk to you, Vinny, because they don't want to be the ones to let the cat out the bag.
Yeah. But
they have no jurisdiction. They have no authority. They don't want to be the ones who are caught, you know, with the pants down.
Well, it's just that it's almost like they're allergic to something. It's accountability. Yeah, they're allergic to accountability. I think that's about right. So they have this immune system thing. So when you're about to make them be held accountable for something of like that nature, their white blood cell, which is a deny and get the frack out of there right now before you get caught and doing what you're doing response comes up. It happens all the time. I've interviewed a number of people who have gotten judges to get up and walk out of the courtroom just by saying one sentence to them. You know, and I think it's because of the fact that perhaps maybe there is a syndicate working within the system. Like, imagine for a moment that is a hierarchical structure, and there's a lot of these different groups, a lot of these different sectors, but only if a certain person or what have you will catch the eye of somebody else, and it just rings within rings until one day one particular person comes and tries to mess with others in the system, and they find out that there's all these different divisions of all these different departments all acting unlawfully, coming at them, and they're like, how did that happen so quickly, unless these people, at least in parts of these different departments all the way up the chain, were in some form of cahoots?
Well, put it this way, the High Court judicial review was struck out because it had no merit, yet I was questioning a judge's decision about ignoring case law, yet they decided to talk about jurisdiction. So that's what I'm saying. They would talk about everything other than the core subject of the matter, which is basically this was some of this other stuff that's coming in now, Vinny. We've had a guy come on the scene called, are you familiar with UK Column?
A little bit, yeah.
Right, this guy called Carl Lentz has just been on the UK Column. He's been over here for about 6 weeks working on some stuff with a few people. Now, he is self-taught common law expert, right? Now, that's what he's claiming. I hardly know the guy. I've listened to his stuff. I've checked out some of his stuff, and it sounds like it could be part of the puzzle. Now, what he's doing is he's going straight to Queen's Bench. Like, he's using the term which is all common law. So, in a Queen's Bench, if you're at Queen's Bench in common law, legislation and legalese can't exist. It's man on man. Now, if you use certain terms, but what happened is that there's an administrative side. So you can go at Queen's Bench and use civil law, yeah, but you have to make it perfectly clear that you are not using civil law, and it's certain terminology that he uses. So he used, like I said, it might be a bit pidgin English, this, because I'm in the middle of trying to learn it myself. Well, he used the terminology of something along the lines of, I, man, require by right restoration of my property. Now, by law, that they must give me my property back in that setting. Now, what they've done is they've clouded the waters by causing this fraud and making me dance about. So I've got to almost back engineer this now. You know, and it's getting it to that place, because I think Queen's Bench is key. We don't know how to invoke Queen's Bench because they're hiding it from us. They will not. They stick their fingers in their ears and will not talk about Queen's Bench. You have to go to county court. You have to appeal it. You have to appeal it. They do not want you at Queen's Bench. Because anybody who knows how this stuff really does work is going to start getting results. And Carl apparently helped this lady, I think it was in New Mexico or some part of the US, and the four kids had been taken off her, and they were in different parts of the state. And he says, do you want your kids back? She says, of course I do. I've been fighting for 2 years. Says, right, say exactly what I tell you. Do exactly as I tell you to do, or you're not going to see him again. So he concocted this terminology with her, and she put it in at this court as documentation before the hearing, and the barrister came running out and said, who's helped you with this? You have got them shitting themselves in there. Like I said, this is only information I'm getting from listeners off his radio show and him himself. You know, so check him out by all means. But this guy... this woman put that paperwork in, then stood in front of the court and said, I, woman, known as whatever her name was, require by right restoration of property, because in that setting, the term man cannot be defined in civil law. The only definition of man is adult male. Now, that could be adult male.
We were actually talking about this before, earlier on in the segment, weren't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what happens with me, Vinny. I start getting off and I go off on a tangent and I end up
back in the same thing. Well, I'll tell you what, here's a good idea. We're going to have a break so that we can take a worky leak, have a cup of coffee, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Paul Webster. And I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show for today. And my very special guest is still Paul Webster. And we're talking about the legal fictions in the English court system there, as well as getting out of your gas and bills and all of these utilities. I don't quite understand that, Paul, exactly. How is it that people are entitled to free use of the electricity and or gas grid because they pay their taxes? Is that how it works?
No, because when the country went bankrupt, the people would be offering their labour, which is going to be the value in this system. You have a right to the natural resources, which is gas, water and electric. You have this natural right. However, it does need paying for, the infrastructure needs paying for, but that's why we invite companies over to our country to conduct business and commerce in our country, to put money into that infrastructure. In the Bills of Exchange Act, in conjunction with the Consumer Credit Act 1974, it's a commercial arrangement that pays, that are liable for the gas, water and electric. And what happens is, if you live in a domestic property, if you ask for a paper bill, I mean, it's not a surprise that you will get discounts for going to direct debit, because you'll never see a paper bill. So you wouldn't understand necessarily what a bill of exchange is. But they issue your domestic property with a bill with a check at the bottom of it. That's a liability check. That's not a payment slip. That's a joint giro credit check. It's drawn on the commercial bank, which is your credit. So it's drawn from that. Your credit is a prepaid account. So rather than you use pieces of paper that you go out and buy clothes and food with, rather than use those bits of paper, you can use them for clothes and food and get your gas, water and electric for free, because it's already been paid. It's already there for you. That's why you're registered. And that liability check is a bill of exchange, and you have three obligations to meet in the bill of exchange. So with these bills, you either send the bill to the commercial bank, who pay the utility company that's on the gas bill. Because let me put it this way. Say I ask you to lend me £200 and you write me a cheque for £200, right? And an hour later you say to me, I need that £200 back. Am I going to go and draw the funds out of my account to give to you? B, am I going to go and cash the cheque and then give you your money back? Or am I going to give you your cheque back? So that's what the companies do. They give you a cheque and then say, you owe us this. So they paid you a cheque, and what you're meant to do is transfer it by your endorsement with your signature, so you execute the document back to them. Now, that's your bill paid. That is your bill paid. So why are little old ladies sat in front of Caligas heaters with quilts wrapped around them, scared to put the heating on? She's earned it. You know, she's earned it. It's a travesty, because I got shouted at for telling people that the gas is free. That their gas bill will go up because I'm not paying it. And to try and explain to somebody that you are paying it, because a bill of exchange is treated as cash. So if I've got a bill of exchange for £10, it's equal to your £10 of a note. So bill of exchange is key in commerce. That's why they use it. You don't see banks transferring paper notes to another bank or precious metals. They sign and date something. That's it. It's a done deal if you're a domestic property. That's how it's written. That's how commerce is meant to have been written. The thing is, have you heard of the posh school down south here called Eton? You've gone offline, mate.
No, I haven't heard of Eton.
Eton is like Oxford.
Oh, okay.
It's a very posh, private school.
So it's not
the age of 11.
So it's not like breakfast.
No. No, not Eton. And it's like, if by the age of 11, Vinny, you are taught the Bill of Exchange Act by the age of 11 at Eton, because this is how commerce works. And like I said, I got this shown to me, and we were messing about with all what mechanisms that they were wriggling out of. Like, there's a term that used to be used called accepted for value, which was still transferred by endorsement. It was acceptable for a bill of exchange, but they tightened it up. Well, they can't get rid of bill of exchange because it would stop them operating. But the very fact is, the company issue you with a gas bill with a liability check. That means you don't pay. It even says on the check, no fee payable at post office counter. That means you don't pay. So, like I said, you either send it to the bank, where the bank ignores what you've done. They just pretend that they're not the facilitator. You transfer it back to the company with your signature by endorsement, which means the company have now got that check. That check is theirs. They can sign and cash it. Your bill's paid. Or the third, which is the most unlikely one, because although I'd love to see somebody try it one day, I may try it just for the devilment, to walk into the local post office with that cheque, sign, date it and say, can you give me the cash on that amount of cheque, please? Because that's a cashable giro. Now, with that money, I am meant to go and pay my gas bill. If I decided to just cash that and spend the money, then I am still liable for that gas. Right, that's what they will say. But the fact is, it's the corporation that's attached to the birth certificate that this rule comes to.
Are we saying that you could actually go in, cash a check that the utility company has sent to you, put that money into your account, and then pay the bill that they've sent you, kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly what it's meant to be. That's why they send you a check.
Ah. Well, now, wouldn't that be interesting if it was the people using sleight of hand, not the utility companies?
Well, that'd be fraud, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I fail to see the difference between what fraud is and what the law mandates is lawful.
Fraud is causing harm or loss. Well, the fact is, they're claiming I'm causing them loss because I've kept their payment. What they do is they send me the payment because they can't cash it. Right? Because they're not me. So I give them the permission to cash it by transferring it to them. That check is now theirs. So if they don't choose not to cash it, whose fault is it they've not been paid?
Mm.
If I give you a check for £1 million, how long would it take you to put it in your bank?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people would say... In fact, you'd also have to be cautious because when you put in a certain amount of money, they always ask you, where did that money come from?
Yeah. Well, we've just had that recently, haven't we? I mean, HSBC was stating that they weren't anything over, I think it was £2,000, if you wanted to withdraw it, you had to explain why. You had to explain what you wanted it for. That soon stopped. They've soon changed the policy on that. They've decided that that's far too... bigger step to try and enforce. I mean, you've got banks everywhere charging you for taking your own money out. It's all about one last grab, this, isn't it? The bank tax is virtually knocking on our door. We saw it in Cyprus where anybody with £100,000 of savings, they were taking 80% of that through a bank tax, which is what I'd probably call robbery.
Which the Prime Minister of New Zealand and the Finance Minister, Bill English, said was a good idea and we should try it here.
Well, why not? I mean, there's a lot of people made a lot of money from it. I mean, I've thought of trying it myself. I thought if I just knocked on every door in my street and said, look, I'm going to collect £10 a week off you, just make sure you give it me. And if you don't give it me, I'm going to force you to give it me. That would be a nice little earner. I wouldn't have to go to work. I wouldn't have to do anything. But that's basically what these people are doing. And we've allowed this to happen, not through stupidity. It's just plain ignorance. You know, we've been hoodwinked. That we've had the hood put over our head for long enough. And it's only people who actually do some research and do some thinking and not be... And it takes a lot. And I think for the main part of it, it'll take for near enough everybody for it to come knocking on their door, or at least until we get over that critical mass point. And then people can actually see it from the comfort of their armchairs. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
and then be encouraged to start taking a bit of responsibility for their lives, because it never ceases to amaze me. People who go into debt and then go into bankruptcy or debt consolidation firms, and all of a sudden they can knock you this huge amount of money off. A mate of mine had a £1,400 bill, and they, after so long of ignoring them, they wrote to him and said, good news, if you pay today, we'll accept £400. Now, I don't know about you, but I couldn't afford to lose £1,000, what was owed to me, pal. But yet this company can just write it off. Why? Because it doesn't exist. It's a negotiable fee. They're trying to fish you in. You give your details, they can take you to a court, and the court's going to find in their favour.
Well, can we talk about critical mass for a moment that you talked there before? It's the same fraud perpetuated, isn't it, on the entire masses. And the masses participate in the fraud because they can't think critically. Ergo, if you want critical mass, you need the masses to be able to think critically.
Think critically, yeah. And it's like only getting, I mean, you know, my friends and family, some of them no doubt are sick to death of me going on about this stuff because they don't want it to be real. They don't want, you know, it's very easy to be dismissive of somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But it's without having actually some argument. Opinion is opinion. Fact is fact. And everybody can debate. And at the end of the day, everybody's entitled to their opinion. When I stop trying to force an opinion on people by just saying, please look, it's important, that type of thing, then my life started to get easier because I wasn't as angry. You know, because you go through different... When you start looking into this stuff, you go through all the emotions. You know, you go through the grief. You know, when I was losing stuff like property, you grieve because there's emotions attached to that property. So you can't help but in the game, they are ripping your heart and soul out, especially of some people. Don't get me wrong. The system itself is perfect if two willing parties go for a genuine negotiation. But that's not what's happening in most of our county courts. People go in there and they're being fleeced. Now, if me and you had a dispute, Vinny, and we went to court...
If that's the way it works, then it does work perfectly either way. One works perfectly for honest people, and the way it works now works perfectly for the dishonest ones.
Exactly. And the fact is that... Unless you know you're right. The thing is with it is they've got far too greedy and they have become complacent. And it's allowed cracks for people to see through and go, hang on a minute, I don't need to even be here. You've no jurisdiction or authority to have me here. You can't even take my pen off me and give it to this man. Never mind take my property. It's theft. But they are that used to you taking a solicitor. Now, if you take a solicitor, which... I'm sure that the mass majority of people who you know, if they got a court summons, the first thing they'd do is seek advice from a solicitor. So you take a solicitor into a courtroom, that solicitor has sworn an oath to the civil procedure rules and is bound by them. Because he is bound by them, he automatically gives jurisdiction and authority to the judge on your behalf because you're now deemed as a child because you brought your guardian with you to look after you. So when some... Bellend like me stands in front of him with no solicitor and says, you have no jurisdiction. What do they do? Well, the ideal thing, Vinny, would have been to go, oh, you're quite right, Mr. Webster, this is mediation. Yes, I need the consent of both parties. On you go. That's it. That would have been it. That would be how the system's meant to work. Because it's a service. It's a private service that's offered. They try and make it you think that... It is law that you have to do it, and it isn't.
You kind of have to be part of the club in order for them to treat you right.
Yes, and what you were thinking earlier on, Vinny, about a syndicate being in layer here. Well, over here we had, I think it was at least three articles in the Independent, the Express and the Telegraph, stating that a Metropolitan Office, Metropolitan Police report stated that there were organised crime gangs of Freemasons spread throughout the judiciary, political and police. Now, if that's coming into the likes of the Daily Fail and stuff like that, they can't hide the fact that that's coming out anymore. It'll make them look very silly. So they're starting to have to fish with us. They're starting to have to feed us these tidbits because we've got the main meal already. We know that this stuff is getting very serious now. You know, and it started with me because people are just too greedy. They've had it all their own way for far too long. Like I said, it's a very quiet town where we're from. And, you know, people are very simple, hard-working people. And it's very easy to pull the wool over people's eyes. And you don't really need clever people to do it. You just need people to think that they're better than these people because they know more. And that's basically what it is in this system. But now they've been caught with the pants down. They're running away and shouting, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Yeah.
But everybody can see they're naked. They're done.
Well, it reminds me of the behaviour of a bratty child. That's what we're talking about, kind of like childish. Now, I was, and... in many parts still am, a very bratty child. I would always, you know, go and throw off in tantrums and act like a real terror and that kind of thing whenever I didn't get my own way. And I think the reason why that was is because I'd had my own way for so long.
Yeah.
That I couldn't deal with not having it my own way.
I can agree with you on that, Vinny. When I had two very hard-working parents... They grew up with next nothing, like I said. My mum grew up Liverpool War, grew up with hardly anything. Those two people worked like dogs. My mum did 13 hours a day in her own business, and my dad did long distance lorry driving permanent nights. So when my dad came home to go to bed, my mum was going up to go to work. But I had the best life, because at one point, Vinny, and you know, when I look back on it, it didn't do me any favours, but this was their way to give me what they didn't have. I had four bikes to choose from. I was spoiled rotten. I was the only child. You know, so these people worked so, so hard to give me all that, and it didn't do me any favours, and you do act like that spoiled child. Then after my dad was killed, it sent me off making a decision that was one of the biggest decisions of my life, which was to get married and have kids at a young age. When I look back, I think I was just looking for different things, but that marriage brought me a daughter that is, you know, doing so well now at college with photography, and we've got such a bond, me and that kid. So you make those decisions, but out of that came, you know, because things happen in relationships. When I tried to move on, I ended up with more than I planned, more than I bargained for. You know, I had insecurity issues, you know, as you're working through your own spiritual stuff as well. Mm. I had my own security issues that I've carried, and for some reason I decided that I was going to pick a woman who suffered with a lot of her own issues and treated me quite poorly as a test. You know, I ended up doing a psychology course, Vinny, because I needed to get an angle of some of the reactions I used to get. You know, I was very used to getting my own way. It was completely the opposite. The shoe was definitely on the other foot. And from that, it's pushed me through all this devastation with the property then being sold fraudulently. You know, they committed a blatant lie to sell this property. And in between all that, my head fell off twice. I had a breakdown the first time, and then the second time wasn't quite as bad, because you do become stronger. You don't know where you get it from. You know, it's like little things like my dog just being there. Just for that second, it snaps you back into this reality and says, not everything's shit like that. Mm. And then you realise that the size of the beast that you're up against, and this beast has been here a long time, and you think, who am I to challenge this? You know, well, if nobody challenges it, then there'll never be a challenge. Somebody's got to challenge it, and it's, you know, like I said, this all came looking for me. It's not been easy to try and fit work in and try and get all this stuff in as well, and then try and find some time where you can just laugh and be happy. Because don't get me wrong, I get plenty of time to sit around and research and stuff like that. That's not a problem. But it's the time when I don't want to think about this stuff. When enough's enough, and you just need that break from it completely. You know, this stuff, if you're an addictive personality and you need drink or anything like that to get through this stuff, you know, you're pushing the envelope of your boundaries. You know, there's a lot of people I know who've ended up as maybe not alcoholics, but they've gone through a phase where they've drank every night at some stage when they've been going through this stuff. Stuff that doesn't need to happen. Stuff that is only happening because certain greedy people, in what you were saying, syndicates, these are all separate syndicates. So at your local county court, you might have a gang of four people who would deal with the shit that you might bring in trouble. But if you turn up with a solicitor, you're going to get the nicey-nicey judge. But as soon as you start challenging them, that's when they get the guns out. I had the judge changed on me 10 minutes before the hearing, at the first hearing, and that was because one question was asked, what jurisdiction do you stand under today to have authority? And within 4 minutes, armed response attended, running in and out of the courtrooms looking for a breach of the peace. So I knew that was for me, and I had police attendance at the next five hearings. I've never had, over this case, I've never had an hearing without a police presence. It went down to 2, but over the first 5 hearings, I had over 30, including armed response and video evidence gatherers, for one question, which was, where do you get your authority from? That's how scared they are. They just want to intimidate you and bully you.
Here's where we get our authority from. You see all those thugs with the guns and the uniform and the black uniforms behind you and all the surveillance devices? That's where we get our authority from.
Yeah, but then the armed response police sergeant comes walking over to you and says, why are we here? And you have to tell them that basically because they're scared that I'm going to attempt to arrest them for abuse of public office, because if they claim that no, they're not in public office, because if they are claiming public office, they're answerable to me and they do not get jurisdiction. But if they're not claiming public office, if they're claiming private, that's completely different. That's offering of a service. So whichever way they go, they're wrong. It's completely transparent.
Well, you've entrapped them.
If you claim that you've got authority over me, show me a proof of claim. Am I your slave, or have I got a contract with you for something? Because if you haven't, you have no authority over me, because only God, Creator, Consciousness, Allah, whatever you want to call what you believe in. But the Creator, then you, then the judge, then solicitors. That's the hierarchy.
So can't they just say, yes, you are a slave?
Well, then they'd be admitting to slavery. Surely that would prick up a few ears. Surely some people...
Is slavery illegal?
No, it's not. It's not illegal. It's
well, then they could just tell you you're a slave and it's legal, so, you know, pay us the money, slave.
They could, but they're talking to your company, they're talking to your corporation. And that's totally different to the man. So if you define yourself clearly as man from Creator, whatever it is you want to call that, nobody has higher authority other than God. Nobody has higher authority, because it's natural law, it's common law.
But what about a judge with a God complex? Would that count?
Yeah, it would, because he's the type of arsehole that I've come into contact with who turned the European Convention of Human Rights over. He decided he could ignore that. Now, that along with case law would be like me going up to a devout Catholic priest, giving him the Bible, and then not bothering him to read it, and then say, I think what God meant to say was, because I've never been that confident. You know, I'm quite confident about this stuff, even though I learn something new every day that maybe takes a piece out of the puzzle that looked like it fitted there, and then something else comes in and joins it even stronger, it looks even better. And it's all about aggregating information. It's not about I found out what's going on. It is this, it's this and this, and I'm right. That's not what this is about. This is about people all not proving each other wrong, not shooting people down, not arguing with each other. I mean, the stuff that I've seen all over the internet, Vinny, and people are all trying to get to the same ends, but, oh, he's criticised my work, and he's tried to set me up as a fraud or anything like that. You know, you've got all these people who are meant to be doing podcasts and blogs and putting up websites and on Facebook, and they're meant to be promoting something, yet they're arguing within groups. And you know that provocateurs go in there, of course they do. But the fact is, anybody who wants to argue with you about something, I mean, I had a debate with a guy who is ex-police. He's been very successful at bringing... at least getting a crime number and an investigation going into history, crimes in history. And he kept he couldn't see the difference of talking about a person and a child, that children couldn't be classed as property because of Edward the Confessor or something like that. But it quite clearly states that if you refer to your offspring, or whatever they want to call it, as a child, you're claiming a person, therefore you're claiming an entity, a corporation, and you're in that jurisdiction. So what you're doing is, you are now in civil jurisdiction, talking about your person, your company, in civil procedure rules, and they're going to railroad you, they're going to do you.
Well, it's not entirely dissimilar from how this new, what was it called, the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, big yep. trade deal that's going now around the Pacific Rim. Yep. It works like that. If you have any grievance, any company, private, has any grievance against the government, let's say the government passes a law banning smoking or something like that, the tobacco companies can then take the country to the world court, which the corporations control, and get yeah. a judgment that they want. And yeah. It's basically just a larger version of what you're describing here on the civil plane, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's what you're talking about. In comparison, my claim, I mean, if you take away the physical, mental and emotional aspects of it, and you just look at the bare bones of the business aspect of it, mine is nothing. You know, 98,000, 100,000, 60,000 is nothing compared to what you're talking about. You're talking about taking a country to the World Court. If they've got smart enough lawyers that have sifted through all that legislation and gone, hey, look at this, bang, 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 we can get this country on this, it'll cost us so much to make the application and go for it. This is the forecast of whether of how, because I don't know if you ever noticed that things go before certain boards, and it's got to be, in some boards, it's got to be over 60%. Like a barrister would like to say, right, that's over 60%, I'll take that on. If it's not over 60%, they won't even consider it. So if they've got that nailed on and they can take a country to the World Court, that, and they control that World Court, then it's just about a transference of wealth. Yeah. It's not about a fine, it's not about anything else, it's a transference of wealth. You owe me this, this and this, I'll tell you what, we'll give you a bit of that. You know, it's all jobs for the boys. It's not all about Freemasonry, because I know a lot of really good, genuine Freemasons, and they're not in it for anything like what the society has been used yeah. for.
Well, and again, this is how the syndicate works. It operates yeah. inside Freemasonry, it operates inside the courts, inside the police, inside the politics. Not all of them are Freemasons, not all of them are cops, not all of them are politicians. But they have a select few throughout all of these organisations, usually in positions of power and influence, who can, if necessary, move things along in the syndicate's best interests.
Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly what's happened at this point. You've had one judge who's... basically, we feel that the judiciary system has had a message put out to it that let none of these bastards win. Not one of them. Mm. You know, not me, not anybody. Don't
I'm
let them win
message.
Any cost. At any cost. So you have got people who are claiming to be a judge with authority, therefore acting in public office over you, and they are turning case law over, and they are turning European Convention of Human Rights over without evidencing any authority and making orders that they are telling you that you're liable for.
Well,
how can you defend that?
Well, they've also got the ability of, shall we say, endless hurdles. You know, you ever heard of the expression shifting the goalposts? And I recall seeing a film not too long ago called North Country. It was about the woman who led the first class action lawsuit for sexual harassment in American history that wound up actually changing the whole world and having sexual harassment in employment contracts for the first time. And it turns out that this happened in like the early 80s or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they only just got a settlement in like the late 90s or early 2000s or something. So even something that's already had a film made about it or something of that nature hasn't even been yet rendered judgment. They're that no. capable of throwing delays and hurdles in your way. They can conceivably keep you from the truth and justice and victory forever, depending yep. on how much they're willing to throw at you.
Well, basically, what you want to look at it is, if you imagine when you're going through life, and obviously you'd want everything that was true, you would want to know what was true and what wasn't true. So as long as you're following that mechanism of truth, you can't go wrong with it. But the trouble is, these people have had these goalposts moving so fast for so long. It's like when you look at something, so you put your argument down and you're looking at something in your argument. This is why when people put, like I did when I first started putting documents in, I put like 17-page dossiers in like that, telling them everything by what colour my kitchen sink was. And I gave my case away because they just went, no, don't need to look at that. No, no, doesn't mean anything. We're talking about trustees of land. No, trustees of land doesn't mean anything because it doesn't apply to me. It's their business. It's their negotiations. I didn't want to take part in it. They insisted I must. Because why? Because they claim jurisdiction. Well, evidence it. Well, no, we don't have to. That's basically what they're saying. Mm. So, Vinny, I could take you to court and say, he owes me £1,000. I've got a witness called Dave from down the pub who witnessed me giving that £1,000. But Dave's not given me any statement, any signed affidavit, and he isn't allowed to come into court so you can actually cross-examine him as to where this happened. It is just taken for granted that you owe me £1,000. Would you call that justice?
I don't think so.
There you go. That's exactly how we're doing it. Now, like I said, not every hearing is corrupt. Could there be corrupt people at every hearing? Of course. There could be corrupt people anywhere where you
are. Yeah, but if you get suspicious and paranoid of absolutely everybody, you'll soon find yourself without any friends or allies.
Yes, certainly. But it's like I said, the system worked perfect. If me and you have a genuine dispute over a property, and me and you just say, let's cut our losses, pal, we'll put it up for sale and split whatever it is. That's how the system's meant to work.
Yeah.
But people are being tricked into the system because you don't know what to say in that court because everything that you're saying is telling them is civil. You're just shouting, civil law, civil law, civil law. That's all they're hearing with all the words that they're picking out. The Carl Lentz stuff, it seems to be an opportunity to try and bypass that and take it straight back to common law, whereas you evidence your authority over me. You've ignored case law. You've ignored the European Convention of Human Rights.
Mm.
You need... You're entitled to fair compensation for your injury. If somebody has stolen your property, that's breach of Section 1, 2, A, B and C of the Fraud Act 2006 and Section 1 of the Theft Act 1968.
Mm.
They've committed fraud. They've taken property that they were entitled to. They've sold it. Who's in trouble? You're in trouble now. Guess what? We're going to run and keep you... We're just going to keep you out of court so you can't prove it. Nobody will be able to listen to you, so we'll just keep keeping it out of court. And that's like what you just said. It's taken all those years, even though it's a well-known fact that this sexual harassment thing... It's because they can dance around in the system. See, the sexual harassment is being... It's a physical... assault. So it's common law. If hands have been put on, that's a criminal effort. But they're being tied up because she's got a solicitor. They're being tied up in that litigation system. You know, everybody remembers the circus that was the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, that was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, how anybody with the evidence that was against him. I have absolutely no idea how they got through that other than a great lawyers team that dissected every single mistake and or made every single mistake look huge to the jury. How he got off with that and then get found guilty on a civil suit, that's very strange. So it looks like it seems to suit people as and when. If you're going to go into a civil system, the more money you have, the better lawyers you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know,
and your lawyers might be part of the syndicate.
And I've had solicitors sit in here and tell me that they've been involved in being a solicitor for 25 years and my argument is wrong. I also sat with a solicitor for an hour who couldn't grasp what I was saying until I explained it in a little bit looser terms that you're... consent is needed in this setting. And I don't know if I told you the story last time about if there's a sign on the wall that says no spitting and there's a policeman stood next to it. I said to the solicitor, if I spit on the floor, is he going to arrest me? No, it's not an arrestable offence. I went, oh, okay, then how does he find me? He's going to ask me for my name and address. And once I give him that name and address, then I'm saying, yes, I accept that chance of a fine. What are you going to do, sir? Are you going to make me clean it up or let me off or give me a stern warning? But I've already set myself up for that fine there and then. But I said to the solicitor, am I obliged to give him my details if I haven't committed a crime? And he said, no. So how does he find me? He can't find you. Mm. It's about how he talks to you, how he extracts information. I'm sure I've just seen an article that school teachers are going to get, or school board members, I couldn't quite remember off the top of my head, that they're going to get police interview type training. Now, why would you want a teacher with police interview type training?
Perhaps it's if you wanted to get the children
of information.
Perhaps if you wanted to teach the children how to properly behave in a police state run by a tyrannical government.
Oh, you sound like a conspiracy theorist, you do.
I'm just taking a stab in the dark.
I can't disagree with you. Or should I say, in my terminology, I can neither confirm nor deny that allegation. But the weight of evidence, albeit whether they want to call it circumstantial, is getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And
I've sort of like it, you know, that old term from cradle to grave, the government's supposed to provide from you, from cradle to grave. And what I've started to think is that we've got graduate systems that you're forced into, right? So you go from the schools and in elementary school, then you graduate to high school, and then you graduate to another thing at university, then you graduate to higher education with a master's and then a PhD. You graduate to being a doctor or something of that nature, and in some cases you graduate to the prison course, and that's I think what I see the schools turning into now is just a preschool version of a prison, so that when you go into prison inexorably because you've have some problems with society, because the family unit's been destroyed, you've got no strong role models except for Justin Bieber and Britney Spears which are not the best, and you wind up going to prison invariably because of all of these social ills that are set against you. And these are things that happen before your birth. You don't even have a freaking choice in them, really. You know, you just get affected by them. You wind up acting the way you do because of your surroundings. In a lot of cases, sometimes people claw their way out of it, but it's extremely unlikely and very, very hard, even if they do manage to make it out of it in the first freaking place. So that is what is happening. Every single part of our life is controlled to a large degree to be heading in one direction, into debt serfdom.
Yeah. It's not just heading, we've been in this system for a while. It's just at this moment in time, even though all over these years they've given us booms and busts, at this moment in time, they're squeezing it so tightly, they're imploding economies everywhere, and they're doing it because they're going to devastate these countries. America is... you know, it keeps getting delayed. They keep doing this raising the debt ceiling, which doesn't raise the debt, apparently, according to Obama. Now, I don't understand quite the logic behind that. So,
that's because
he must be far more intelligent than I am.
Yeah, but that's because it's a lie. That's
exactly. you just can't get away from this fact right now. This is the most eyes that this entity, this beast, has ever had on it in its entire existence. You know, we can all debate where and when it started and who started it, this, what and whatever. It doesn't really matter. The fact is that these events have happened. There's many a thing involved apart from Freemasonry. You've got many, many, many other different secret societies that people don't know about, you know, Knights of this and Knights of that and all these kind of orders. And you've seen historical documents of these. The Thule Society, where the Nazis and all the occult beliefs and stuff like that. People think occult is about scary stuff, and it's not. It's just about hidden. And it's just like I said to you, if you don't know your bank account, your PIN number, and I've got your card and I know your bank, you have to come to me if you want money. I control that money, but I'm not actually lending it to you. So I'm not actually doing anything apart from going to the bank and I'm charging you, what, maybe 40 quid for that, I don't know, and then interest on it. So every time you don't pay, every time you take, you know, that time to pay the £40 up to 200, I charge you interest on £40, which is, what, call it a tenner for argument's sake. So I've made 50 quid on four payments of 200 quid that I didn't get for you.
Yeah, but that's acting under the assumption that there's a limit to the growth of the money and the expansion of the money supply. The reality is, unfortunately, there no longer is a limit, or at least not in New Zealand anyway. Unlimited supply is able to be given, right? So you don't even need 1% in reserve of what you're loaning out. You need nothing.
Wow. Really, you don't even need $1 to lend 90 out now?
No, you don't even need 1 cent to lend $100 billion.
Jesus, that is... No wonder, you know, that they're saying that New Zealand's the biggest money laundering capital of the world at the minute.
Incidentally, it is the, according to Transparency International, the least corrupt country in the world. Because Transparency International sends out a questionnaire asking the government of your country, so, what corruption has happened in your country this year? And they go, none, and send it back.
You couldn't write it, could you?
You're going to love this country, man.
Let me get this right. A country is being bled dry, raped and pillaged, and the people you ask are the people who are doing it. Are you doing anything wrong? No.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's why Transparency International calls it the Corruption Perception Index. Because if the people who are perceiving the corruption are the ones who are responsible for the corruption, then it's accurate.
You're right. Oh my god. That's unbelievable. I didn't realise it had got so bad over there.
Oh mate, well the problem is it's that bad everywhere.
See, over in England we haven't quite got to that stage yet. Or should I say, at least it's not encroached down into my life yet. It's not physically starting to affect. The fact is that the system has never changed in England because, like you said before, this is the country that gave birth to this beast. You know, our central banking system is everywhere. And the fact is, this is one of the strongholds. The inner city of London, therefore England, they don't want to have it turn on them too soon. Do you know what I mean? This is a bastion for them. The US now is expendable. The globalists have bled that dry. They've paid big companies to ship out to overseas to China, and they've used public taxpayers' money to pay for that, so they can only have to pay 7 cents an hour in wages, or $7 an hour. I'm sure it's 7 cents.
Yeah.
You know, surrounding with suicide nets, forcing these people. That's much better to make money. You know, you're talking about people who would make arsenic a childhood medicine and still sleep like a baby at night.
Mm.
It's a different mentality to what people always put their emotions into if they were in that position. Well, if I knew that was bad for babies, I wouldn't allow it. Well, you wouldn't be in that position where if that opportunity arose, for whatever reason it might be, then you wouldn't be in that position to stop it, because somebody would always be put in that position to make sure it happened. Because there's no other way that they would want this system to work.
Never underestimate the power of good blackmail.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Kill this person, or I'm going to release these photographs of you cheating on your missus, and we're going to release it on the mainstream media that we control. Okay, buddy?
Yeah.
What you going to do?
You're going to toe the line, or you're going to sacrifice yourself.
You see, me, I'd fortunately try and sacrifice myself at every available opportunity. In fact, I said it on Facebook the other day. You know, the two easiest things for me to say, the first is, hi, and the second is, I'm sorry. So, you know, introduce myself. Hi, I'm Vinnie Eastwood, and I'm sorry.
I'm sure it'd make the world a better place if everybody just said sorry. I mean, even if...
You've been to a supermarket. It's the most common thing you hear when you're, like, moving down the aisles and somebody's blocking your way. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that Carl Lentz says, because he's an American. He's a very direct man. I mean, I'd go as far to say as he's one of the bluntest men I think you could possibly ever talk to. Because if you're trying to talk law to him, if you're talking about legalese and civil stuff, he's not going to talk to you about it. And he's not going to let you down lightly. He's going to directly tell you that you're talking a load of shit, you don't need it.
Mm.
You know, this is how he works with it.
So he appears to have mastered the art of being blunt without being obtuse.
I don't know. He seems like a very genuine guy, but like I said, you don't know somebody just because you've seen a couple of video clips.
Yeah, totally.
You're sharing information. This guy's sharing some information, but he's very direct about how you go about it. And one of the things that amazes him, particularly over in England, what he witnessed was far too many people stand around being far too polite, while people like me, it's meaning him, if I want to get things done, I just go and tell him. He went to the Royal Courts of Justice at 7 o'clock at night and got a court opened because he knew what to say and who to say it to. There's always a judge on hand 24/7 at Queen's Bench because the Queen might want something. And we are the Queen's subjects, so therefore it's our court. That's why they don't want us in Queen's Bench. They want you to talk about absolute bollocks that means absolutely nothing. And they've just got the right people in the right positions where they're just going to keep telling you all this. I'm going to take this off you.
That would be quite nice, actually, because going to court in the middle of the day when people are supposed to be at work, so you can't work because you've got to go to court, that really sucks. It'd be a great way to get out of it.
Yeah, but like I said, this guy went and he said he went to the security guard and he says the security guard told him it was at 10 o'clock in the morning. He went, no. And he asked for the manager, he asked for a specific type manager. And he said, if the Queen was here now, would there be a court opening Queen's Bench? He went, of course. He went, then I'm the Queen's subject, so open the court. That's my court. And he goes into the court and he presses the record. Now, this terminology is apparently terminology that judges are trained for their ears to pick up to, because they know that you are now operating the capacity of common law as a man and not as an entity. How we invoke that and get to that stage, I'm not sure of yet. Like I said, everybody's learning.
You've mentioned something before, is that so many people are coming at it from all these different angles with all these different answers. And what I find interesting is I've talked to a lot of these different people who are going about it all these different ways, and they've all had successes.
Because there's no right or wrong answer. It's endurance and how good the people are at running away from you.
Yeah.
That's all. That's the stage that we're at, Vinny.
Well, I think it's like, let's say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it works kind of thing. Do whatever you want, you know, and you just got to be prepared to accept the fact that you live and work against an unjust system. You have to expect that unjust things will happen to subvert the course of justice at all times. And sure enough, they do, but you just have to keep persisting and persisting, and eventually you start to realize that you alone are the one with the power to undo this particular section of the unjust system. And I think if everybody was doing that at the same time, the system would be under such massive threat from all sides that it would have no defensive capabilities whatsoever. It would be simply disabled.
It would be done now. It would be done if that happened. So like I said, people don't realise just how indoctrinated and how encroached the system is on them, because a lot of people just want to go to work, want to pay the bills, want to stay under the radar, want to go and watch football or rugby at the weekends, spend time with friends, go on holidays. But the fact is, the game is rigged. Mm. If you're going out and swapping your labour for something, that's one thing. You know what you're expecting. You are actually wanting. You're saying, I'll do that work for that amount of money. But then you get taxed on it, and you get taxed on it through a consensual tax. Now, there's no law stating that there is income tax. That isn't a law. That is simply fact. Now, if you wanted to volunteer tax to, and you knew it went towards the public, like say we have a thing called the council tax, which is a local rates tax on every property. Now, they rake all this in, and they send it off down to the coffers in London, and then they have to apply for it back. Now, I'm sure that people would, in a community would not mind at all paying taxes if that money stayed with that community, was spent on amenities, was spent on roads, was spent on things to actually enhance the community. You wouldn't get one person saying, I won't pay any taxes. But the fact is, you've been tricked out of it. The money isn't going to you. It's going to private corporations. And the thing is, at the end of the day, the credit and the loans that you go out and get, you end up paying for as well. It's like insurances, Vin. If you claim on your insurance goes up every year anyway. All they do is project it into the future and state, well, if we pay out on this, if we pay, have to pay £20,000 out on this, his insurance, by the time we get to 5 years, he will have paid us that back and more. So you pay for the payment they just give you because they have liability insurance. Mm. So you, the commerce is there. You just pay your own money to get a compensation. So you get, you think you've just been compensated, but eventually you've paid for it.
So basically, they don't have any liability because they've got the ability to lie.
Vicarious liability.
You know, it actually does confound me sometimes, just the length and breadth of all the ways that people are being screwed over by the system. And at this point in time, there's a dualistic split happening. I think in university I heard about this digital divide, which means those in the third world don't have access to computers now, and so their rate of technological and cultural development is actually moving at a far slower rate than people who are connected with digital technology and computers and everything, which actually speed up the development of culture. Whether or not that development is for the better or worse, I think, is for the sake of argument. However, there does seem to be two inexorable truths. Number one, people on the whole are getting really, really dumbed down. And the second truth is that people in minorities are becoming far more intelligent. So you're actually splitting people up into a class of the dumbed down versus the wisening up. Now, there's good and evil on both sides of those. So let's say you've got dumb cops and smart lawyers. You've got dumb truthers and smart truthers. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of people within this movement, not to name any names, who don't have any idea what they're talking about at any given time because they don't know how to research, critically think, or even admit when they're wrong. And it's the same thing. I was perplexed one day about why there's so many people like that in this movement that's supposed to be all about, you know, truth and being honest and not being a scumbag. And you just find out that there's so many dishonest scumbags amongst us, you know. And I think the answer is they came from, like everybody else, from the world of their sleep, the sheep, okay?
Yeah.
Wherever you go, you take the weather with you. If you haven't actually developed yourself to the point where you can let go of all of those habits and emotions and thought processes that held you back in the first place, you're going to bring the same behaviors and habits into this movement, which we hope to eradicate that kind of mentality. But you have to do it yourself. Nobody can do it to you. Nobody ever wakes you up. You wake yourself up. Nobody ever solves your emotional problems. You've got to solve. And unfortunately, we've got to take a break just now. So, but just quickly finish your point, and then we'll go to break there, Paul.
It was just that when you're saying about waking up, it's for me. I've always known there was something not right. Just by certain questions that I remember I've asked throughout my life. But, you know, the things that got me into this from a very early age, I remember being interested in the Kennedy assassination and asking my dad in a documentary in about 79, I think it was, Dad, how did they make that last bullet change direction in mid-air? Because me and my dad shot air rifles. Now, I didn't have an air rifle that could shoot around corners. Apparently, they've got that kind of technology now. But I asked him how they do that, and he just laughed. He said, well, they can't. But he never told me anything, because it was up to me to... You know, he wanted me to go and find out information. Well, that's hard to come by in 1979. It's all about the control aspect of it. It's,
thank God for the internet, even though it might be a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it is, Paul.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
To tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to ride, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
And we're back for the third and final hour with the amazing, fabulous, and ever so intricate Paul Webster. Welcome back.
I've been described worse.
Now, there was one particular funny thing about England that occurred to me and my mates the other day. We did a song about it. I won't play it because it's terrible. But there's actually a people in England, I'm aware, known as Scouse.
Yeah, man. My roots are in Scouse land.
Now, what is it like being Scouse?
Just like any other traditional type thing that you've grown up with. There's a lot of bad press about Liverpool, but you get bad press about all the inner cities now. And, you know, there are generations of youth and that have nothing. You know, they're given nothing. So there's reputations that are forged, but there's one thing about these people is, in my experience, the humour, the ability to be able to laugh through times of absolute, you know, devastation. The stories are rife through the history. It's just everybody's lost their way a little bit now. I mean, at the moment, I've been looking at some... I joined a site which has put old photographs of where I'm from. And some of them dating back to the 1700s. And how this place has changed, not for the better, I might add. You know, it was beautiful. It was beautiful, don't get me wrong. There was... the pit estates, you know, the council estates, where you got the hard-working labourers who didn't have much of education in those days. And you see how much things have changed. And when you look around, it's not for the better. And the thing is that the Scouse accent is very hard to understand when you get into the proper inner-city stuff. You know, there's some that they do sound like they're talking on static all the time with... all this kind of stuff, but you know, it's an accent that I've always been able to, don't get me wrong, there are some I can't understand, but because I've grown up, I'm not a Scouser as such, but I'm like most of my family are Scouse, so you get to, at family dues and that, you get to know what the type of humour is and the banter, and You know, if you can walk through Liverpool city centre with a smile on your face and have a, you know, after a few sarcasm things out, you'll be welcome there. You know, the majority, as in everywhere, the majority are good people. It's just that we are promoted with the bad side of it. And unfortunately, as you get into the inner cities these days, it is getting bad. You know, people are losing hope. You can only take so much off someone. And then there's nothing left to take. And, you know, it's not about making excuses for people, because people can and should pull themselves up to better climates. But, you know, if that's what you know, if that's what you've learned, and you've never had the opportunity to learn anything else, it does, you know, one man's experience is totally different to another man's. Even if we walk down the same street together, I don't see what you see and I don't feel what you feel. It's all about the experience and the social engineering that's gone on over the decades. It's essential that they lost the generations. I mean, I remember all the music and all that being taken over. And when I look back at the promotions of this different type of music, and I just accepted it for people who were just making songs, who were expressing themselves in music and words. So different songs meant different things, different bands meant different things, different people were expressing their own opinions. When you look back at seeing that has been manipulated, and now you see people like Miley Cyrus, who's meant to be a role model for 7-year-old kids, doing what she does on a stage. You know, I mean, at 7-year-old...
It's enough to...
My daughter didn't even know what she wanted for breakfast, never mind to dance about doing stuff like that, because kids are kids, but there's something been lost, Vinny, over the last 2 or 3 generations.
It's enough to break Daddy's achy, breaky heart.
Isn't it just, if he wasn't just a prick as well, you know, it's very easy to get lost in this system, but if you look at the people who are in the system, they're broke. They're broke as anything.
Yeah.
You know, something like Britney Spears, the stuff that she's gone through, and now she's promoting herself as being all well and this, that and the other again, there's just something sick. You know, there's something sick about that environment. You know, I always remember a guy called Dave Chappelle, a comedian, who made it quite big. He was a friend of Martin Lawrence's. And he said Martin Lawrence, who has come from the ghetto with him, gone through some tough times, gang members, all that kind of stuff, guns, and made it to the big time. He's out in the street in his boxer shorts wielding a gun because they're saying, they're out to kill me, they're out to kill me. He said, what kind of a sick environment does that to somebody who has come through tougher times? Maybe it's not him that's lost his mind. Maybe it's the environment that is sick.
Yeah.
And if you look at the environments that people grow up in, if you grow up in a sick environment, you are going to be promoted to be sick. Whether you like that or not, it's very easy for somebody on the outside of that to say, well, they should have done this, they should have done that. I managed to go out and get a job. Well, your experience wasn't quite like it. And for the people who do drag themselves out of that, all the more power to you, because that takes a hell of a character to take yourself from something like that to something better. Not everybody is that motivated. Not everybody's here to be that motivated. Some people are here meant to be part of the problem, because if you couldn't find the people who are part of the problem, then how would you ever fix anything if you'd ever even know anything was wrong? The fact is, for many decades, we've not known that there's anything wrong. Yet, they're making this big push now where they're starting to batten down everything down, so it's getting more and more blatant. But we're learning every day. These people learn every day as well.
Do you feel that people can define themselves and what they're for by what they're against? Like, let's say, for example, you're against tyranny. Does that mean that you're for freedom?
I suppose so. But see, one man's tyranny is another man's freedom. So you get dragged into the argument of, just because you've not got a dictator that's being tyrannical, that's a visible one, it's very easy to disguise that. And we're in such a society that it's being disguised, not anymore, thankfully, but it's being disguised through your own consent. That's the biggest travesty of it all. These people sit back and laugh at us all day long, and they are actually doing and getting away with things now that 20 years ago they wouldn't have even tried, because this system wasn't so much under that control. This has been an incremental thing.
Well, I've got this opinion that actually the system was under their control in the first place, but they didn't want to use what powers they had in order to take everything over instantly, because they believed that it would be better to play a slow game and move in for the kill and get the knife around your throat before they even realise that you're there.
Well, definitely, because it's like the frog in the boiling water. If you throw a frog into boiling water, it jumps straight out. But if you put it into cold water and turn the heat up incrementally, the frog doesn't even know it's killing, it's boiling to death.
It makes you a more efficient killing machine, isn't it?
Yeah. And we have a society now that has been broken in so many ways, mentally, physically in some aspects of the country,
spiritually.
And the mechanisms for all that control are now falling to pieces.
Can I say something? I had a very important thought the other day with a couple of friends of mine. I shared this with them. Mental, physical, spiritual, those are the three aspects of the things that define the human condition. You know, those are your three compulsions. Is it physically compelling? Is it spiritually or intellectually compelling? You know. And I had a brainwave. I thought, hold on a second. What if you build something in the physical world that doesn't, it's not part of your body or anything. You build something, but it actually gives you physical well-being, mental well-being, and spiritual well-being.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible to do that, isn't it, with inventing objects. And so something hit me. You can actually make real things that can influence the entire spectrum of what it is to be human. And I think that that is actually the most powerful thing that we're capable of doing, is we're capable of bringing things from our mind into reality, and then it pings back and it affects everything. Right?
Yeah.
You build a system, you build an invention, a piece of technology or something like that, that it starts to have a ripple effect. Now, I was thinking about this in terms of, say, my radio show. We have important discussions like the ones we've been having tonight here. And what occurs to me is that I'm creating that physical resource for people perpetuity, you know, hopefully, to absorb this information and to listen to it and review it and help them inspire new thoughts and things like that. Yeah. So in a very real sense, I'm making an impact of sorts on the mental, physical, and spiritual fabric of society.
Of course, because you provide a medium, you provide that platform. I mean, believe it or not, Vinny, I wouldn't actually class it as viral, but over 2,000 people saw that video I did with you.
Mm.
And friends and family were, they were quite shocked with what I was talking about. I got a lot of compliments, even though that's not what I'm fishing for. I don't need compliments. I want people to understand that through things happening to me, I have learned stuff. I don't say that I've got the answers, but I'm saying there's a damn good valid point here. If this was a local business that was taking taxes from the people and using the court system, stuff like that. If you recall, America went through all that and still going through it with corrupt police departments, judiciary, and people are just having money taken from them. Now, that's always happened to us, but we fought against it. But somehow, in this country, we've been sideswiped. It's like everybody was just put to sleep in a mass hypnosis all at one point, because I look back at history, some history documents, and even some, maybe not, that like working class people like myself or lower classes than myself, people knew about this stuff. People knew how it worked. People understood politics. And if somebody had said to me, here's a DVD on contract law 10 years ago, Vinny, I'd have said, are you mad? Harry Potter's on tonight? It wouldn't have occurred to me until you see how this system works and how it affects you and where you stand in it. And the most important thing is where you stand in it. This system is big enough to shoot one person down and take everything from them. But more and more people are doing this because they have no choice. People would not choose to go and take this system on. I'm convinced nobody would, or very few anyway. But if you work damned hard for your house and then you find out that somebody who's trying to take it from you refuses to prove the claim by showing you a bill of exchange that they must still be in possession of to claim that you owe that amount. If they haven't got that to produce, then they've sold it, and if they still can't produce it, then the mortgage is void. That's how the system's meant to work, but the collusion that goes on is they'll turn case law over. You cannot be heard. They don't want you to win in either court. They keep the common law court away from you, send you into county court, and then send you chasing bits of paper. And all the meantime, you're looking at the goal, but they've moved the goalposts, and you're looking in the wrong direction.
Mm. Well, and also you think that certain authorities are meant to be there to police the other authorities in a way? Like if you got a problem with this guy, you can go complain to that guy and he deals with them and fires them, or there's some form of recompense, right? But there that's isn't, because they're on the take. And that's the real issue here, I think, is a root of corruption, like a tulip bulb, something just beneath the surface that has this beautiful flower on top, and it looks really nice and looks really official, but there's actually just basically a dead poison seed in the earth that you can't see that needs to be dug out, like any weed.
And
here's the question, ultimate paradox: how do you get justice in a system where the people you're trying to get justice on are the justice system?
That is my question exactly. That is what I'm trying to find out. I mean, like I said, when I tried to report this to the police told me that they wouldn't give me a crime number because it's a civil matter. If I take some property from you, Vinny, claim that I have the right to sell it and then sell it to somebody, then that is fraud. That's criminal. You have stolen something from me. If that was my car, the police would be straight round and arrested you. So what is the difference between property? None. It's because the court system and the judges and the solicitors and the corporations are involved.
Mm.
So they tell the police that it's civil. If a policeman got a solicitor involved, he would tell you it was a civil matter.
You know what's ironic? Is that there's really nothing civil about it, is there?
Not anymore. I mean, it is quite civil, you know. You do speak very nicely to each other, but it's in terminology that doesn't mean what you think it means. And you could spend years. These people do this for 4 or 5 years to learn all these legalese and the civil rules procedure rules.
It's kind of like when you get those letters from an employer or somebody you're hoping to get a good news from or something like that, and then they start the letter with this word, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them.
You suddenly know what the rest of the letter's going to contain. And the irony is, they make a fortune off of your misfortune.
Yep, and if they don't create your misfortune, they certainly perpetuate it. And if you stand up against them, they're going to do everything to put you down because they don't want you to win. They can't allow you to win.
Mm.
But they've got to a point now where people have chipped away at them. People have got them from all these kinds of arguments. So if you're suddenly one gun against three people with guns, and then all of a sudden you have now 300 people against the three people with guns, the three people with guns need to start either trying to renegotiate or blend into the people who are already there, or do one. And what they're doing now is they're trying to do one, but the fact is they don't want you in court. They just, at the moment, they're keeping me out of court. They're doing the best to keep me out of court, because if I got him in court, he would have to answer how he's managed to sell the property. And it would be because he claimed to the buyer that I didn't turn up at the last hearing, and they were granted power of attorney. Well, that hearing never happened because I was at the last hearing and it was a foreclosure hearing, nothing to do with grants of power of attorney. So how's he sold the house? He hasn't. He sold it fraudulently and then tried to pay me, which would give my implied consent to the sale. And the judge, in my opinion, is helping him, aiding him, facilitating, whatever word they want to use. And if you look at facilitate, it does have a definition for fraud. So the judge is actually playing the game. These people must have their hands dirty, I'm convinced of it, because like I said, the judge that was in charge originally got switched 10 minutes before, after that question of jurisdiction was asked. And for me, that's where you now see people who are in the syndicate that you referred to.
What that reminds me of is almost every action movie that you've ever conceived of, where the bad guy suddenly realises he's got a really dangerous good guy on his hands here, and he calls in his chief assassin or head henchman or something like that to go take him out, isn't it?
Or armed response, yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's the problem, and again, another paradox, the show of force. They're willing to use force, yet we can't, because if we do, we'll be completely overwhelmed right away. And nobody wants any domestic insurrection or wars or bloods running in the street or anything of that nature. The problem is, if it ever come to some kind of an uprising, who would fire first and who would the propaganda machine support? This is the question that I'm starting to wonder myself is, what kind of tactics would be used to subvert the media sensation around some kind of an intellectual awakening? Now, as we see so far, it is, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. That seems to be working quite well. It's a old trick, and it still works quite well. They throw patriotism at you. Well, hey, you know, you're an American. You've got American problems. I'm from New Zealand. I've got New Zealand problems. So, you know, we'll just keep to ourselves, and we'll fight for our own freedom, and so on and so forth. Actually, bro, we're all being enslaved simultaneously at the same time. It's kind of like we're all fish trapped in one net. Have you ever seen the movie Finding Nemo? And at the end, one of the fish gets trapped in a net with all these other fish, and they tell them all just to swim down. And the weight of all the fish, New Zealand accent coming out there, like fish and chips. with all the weight of all the fish swimming down together, it actually broke the net off and they all managed to go free. And I think that's quite an amazing analogy to think about what we're dealing with here on a global level, is that you can't just get rid of the corruption in the court or the political spectrum or the media or any of the systems one at a time. I think that
it's all the same thing. That's why it's so good that everybody's coming from different angles.
Some
people are attacking the media and exposing them. Some people are exposing the police. There's a guy who I know who's actually taken a criminal conviction to the high courts against two Metropolitan Police officers who acted unlawfully. It's quite simple how this stuff works. It's just people think, because like a bailiff thinks, because they've got a shape of a crown stamp on a document, that gives them authority, and it doesn't. And when I got one of the occasions where I knew the gas people were coming with a warrant to put in a pay-as-you-go meter. Now, the fact is, they can only apply for a warrant of entry under a health and safety issue. The guy ended up stating in court that it was a monetary dispute and not health and safety, because they checked the supply when they read the meter. So therefore, we were in the wrong jurisdiction, being in the magistrate's court, asking for a warrant, because you need to substantiate that bill. You can't hold a piece of paper up that you claim I owe you when I put legal documents in with acts and statutes that state this is how I paid it, and you just stick your fingers in your ears and say I'm not talking to you, and you won't give it to a legal team. So you start seeing this stuff to work. And I got home this one day, and I gets out of the car, and as I'm walking forward to go and speak at the edge of my property, because I pulled up in the car, I was on the way home from work, goes to the edge of the property, and I'm met by six policemen, a locksmith, a warrants officer, and a gas fitter. all ready to break in my house. Now, I had somebody in the house who prevented entry. When I got there, before I could speak, a policeman said to me, "You're going to have to let him in, mate. He's got a warrant." And I turned to the policeman and said, "Are you here acting as peacekeeper or bailiff today?" And he went, "Oh, we're just here to keep the peace." I said, "Then your opinion's not warranted." So I turned to the warrants officer and said, "I'm standing under common law. This is civil jurisdiction. There is a dispute going on with British Gas, and I have got paperwork in, and this account is in dispute, so you need to leave this right now." And I said, "If you try and gain entry to my property, I will remove you from this property by any means necessary, with no more force than necessary." Right? The police have nothing to say to that because they knew I was right. They knew I was right on the common law. I could remove him from my property. And he never tried to gain entry. And they went. Threatened me with, "This won't last for 21 days. I got on the phone to British Gas and said, just told me, "If you don't stop this warrant without answering these questions..." And obviously, once you put a dispute on the account, they can't chase you for money until the dispute's resolved. But British Gas, E.ON, name any of the big companies that you like, Scottish Power, these have computer-generated letters that just say, "Oh, that bill's not been paid in as far as our records are concerned. Right, we now go to this next stage." So computer-generated letters sent out with a computer signature on it. Don't even know if that person exists in real terms. Says, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Eventually, it gets to the stage where they apply for a warrant. And despite me having two warrants already thrown out last year, and me asking for a summer bill, a separate summer bill, and a separate autumn bill, so that I can pay my gas bill, they've decided to ignore me. They won't engage with me, Vinnie. I've faxed headquarters. I've recorded delivery things to people. I even went against my own rules and rang India up or wherever the company's based. Do you know what? They had to email the UK about my dispute. They had to email the UK to explain about my dispute because they couldn't do anything. So that's what you're up against. Basically, if I got somebody legally trained, the only thing they could say to me is, "You haven't paid that bill because you've not done the bill of exchange correctly." Well, if you're legally trained, you can see my intention is honourable. I want to pay this through that bill of exchange, which is payable under the Bill of Exchange Act and the Consumer Credit Act, because it's a domestic property. Show me how to do it correctly. As soon as they show me how to do it correctly, boom, done. But they won't put anybody legally trained in front of you. And that is the system that... This comes back to double dipping. They started double dipping at first, because when they first introduced this, a lot of people would sign that liability check and send it back with the bill and their payment. Well, you paid, like, say, £400 for your gas bill, but you've signed a check for £400 as well. So you've just paid them £800, some in your own cash and some in your credit. So they've been making money hand over fist. No wonder they're making billions.
Well, no wonder they're seizing control and ownership over everything worldwide. The Midas touch. You know, you can turn anything into gold, something of value, by simply touching it. And I think that's what these people do. They come at anything with the Midas touch, turn it into some gold for themselves.
Yeah. And we've been asleep long enough to help them do it. Because we do help them do it. They've done nothing illegal. But that doesn't mean anything when you realise that Hitler did nothing illegal either. Everything was made legal. The passports, the papers, the people being spirited away under certain acts, that what we talked about before, his own party being slaughtered, the Reichstag fire, setting, you know, to pass legislation to start arresting people. You know, you see all this stuff as it happened in history, and it's only a bit of reading. I tell people to, you know, it's the omnibus of your soap on Sunday, and spend half an hour, spend half an hour researching something that's concerning you, because there's not one aspect of your life this doesn't affect. Not one aspect. You know, if you're obsessed with football, you're telling me you can't realise why these players are paid the kind of money to keep you entertained in such a way, to keep you distracted. You don't understand that. That's anathema to me.
I hate watching rugby, and one time I decided I'd put myself through a rugby game, and I decided that I'd make it fun by counting the amount of advertisements that I saw in an... In a non-commercially interrupted broadcast, I saw 87 advertisements.
You must have been really bored at that rugby game.
Yeah. I mean, if I wanted to see men struggling to score for over an hour, I'd just go to a bar.
Yeah. Well, it's the same over here. We have rugby, we have football, we have cricket. You know, we're not very good. Oh, well, I won't say we're not very good at any of them, but we're always nearly there. You know, and the only sport I obsess with has always been football.
Yeah.
You know, I could talk about football for ages. I mean, obviously I've got a bigger scope to talk about things now because that's more important. But I still love my football. My team drew today instead of winning, and we didn't play well. And it does still put that little bit of a dampener, but at the end of the day, it is just a game. Yeah. But the fact is, I cannot justify going paying the kind of prices to watch these people play with beautiful skills, play a beautiful game. But the reason they're paid this kind of money, it's not about just a game anymore. It's about a distraction. It's about promoting people. It's about revenue. You know,
Have you ever noticed that a lot of the elections always take place during massive sports kind of competitions?
Yeah, because they want to link you into everything. You know, it must be cool if David Cameron attends a football match. It must be cool. You know, it must be for the people. Jesus.
Yeah. It was quite funny. In New Zealand, we had the Rugby World Cup, I think in, 2008, I believe, or it might have been 2012. I forget because I don't care. No, I just don't care. And it was funny, though, because I remember the election turnout, and it was the lowest election turnout since 1886, before women even had the ability to vote.
It just tells you that people realise, at the very least, at the very lowest point, people realise that it's not worth voting for, because you're just voting for whatever it is that's going to be against you. Mm. They know what's coming. Mm. They have they don't just put somebody in charge and give them nothing. It's carefully selected. People are definitely selected. You have maybe three people to choose from. If they have control of those three parties, then if there's a nefarious undertone to any of it, then you've lost, because you just it's best of the devil, you know. Well, no, not really. I'd rather not have the devil.
I'd rather the troublemaker. Like if somebody's been thrown out of parliament before, that gives them credibility to my eyes, because they're willing to say something that will get them thrown out of parliament. You know what I'm saying? Somebody to at least throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in the works, and at the very least make it a hell of a lot more entertaining to watch.
Well, the thing is, that's what we actually need. If there are genuine people still left at the higher levels, it's down to them to actually at least say something, if they are these honourable people. If not, if they're not dirty, if there's nothing that people have got on them, or they're just completely into the lifestyle, then they've got to start whistleblowing. And the fact that you see laws, or legislation, I should say, trying to be passed to prosecute whistleblowers, because they're already trying to prove them guilty through the media, you can see an agenda's being pushed there.
Mm.
It's, you know, and if you've got somebody who's going to get punished for speaking the truth or attempting to shed light on the truth, then you have a tyranny. It's a self-definition.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, well, I thought of what you were saying that there about whether or not you got something on you in terms of eternal blackmail. I believe MKUltra in the United States, run by the CIA, had a couple of nice rooms set up, and they had their mind control subjects who would be trained as sex kittens or whatever to lure congressmen, senators, influential people and what have you into these rooms so that they could film and record them having these perverse sexual encounters with their operatives, and in order to blackmail them into passing and or supporting certain pieces of legislation. And I'm aware that MI5 was recently in the headlines. I can't remember this specifically, but apparently there's some kind of big blackmail list or what have you on massive celebrities in England. And something like that. Like, what's his name? Jimmy Savile, for example. The Queen has MI5 clear everybody for a knighthood, right? And apparently there have been a number of people with knighthoods that have been implicated in major pedophile rings. And allegedly Jimmy Savile was even involved even getting children into Buckingham Palace for the royals to use. But that's unsubstantiated.
Yeah,
and what occurs to me, though, is that it seems to fit the pattern. Because when I think of corruption, when I think of debauchery, when I think of lack of morality, what occurs to me is that there's different levels on it based upon the power that you have in order to wield it and or cover it up. So if you're just some poor, broke psychopath on the streets or something like that, some of the worst things that you can do is you can maybe rape a child, kill a person, steal their money or weasel them out of a deal or something. But if you're a billionaire psychopath, the amount of hunger that you must have to reach even greater levels of scumbaggery must be absolute. And therefore, it would be of no surprise to me to learn that the most powerful and influential and wealthiest people in the world would be engaged in the most horrific acts, albeit maybe even on a freaking regular basis for all we know.
Well, that, like I said, that's something that, as this stuff starts coming out, you can see it's coming out in the mainstream media that there's something linked with paedophilia every other day, if not every day, and politicians from yesteryear and even today are being implicated. People talk about it going right back to number 10 Downing Street, and there's quite well-known information, be it circumstantial evidence right now, that show that this stuff has and that is going on. I mean, there's a guy called... are you aware of a guy called Kevin Annett?
It rings a dingleberry to me.
It's the ITCC. It's the International Court.
Oh, them. Ha, ha.
Yeah. The International Court. Now, apparently there's a warrant out for the arrest of Elizabeth Windsor.
Mm.
And this court was held in Malaysia, with three judges, a jury. All the parties were serviced and invited to come and attend, and it was to do with the procurement of 10 Aboriginal children from Canada in 1964. The royal party allegedly turned up, took 10 kids out for the day, but those kids were never seen again. And these people claim to have evidence that they have been part of genocide and all this other kind of stuff. And they found them guilty in an international court. They found the Pope guilty. Ratzinger, they found him guilty. He resigned the day after. Synchronicity, coincidence, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it seems like a snowball effect to me.
Yeah, and it's coming from all different angles. You've got people who are doing stuff like that. You've got the UCC filings, which are it's very complicated stuff. It makes sense, but it's getting it heard. That is the point. That ICC stuff is going to come into the play somewhere down the line, but it's not going to get you to where you want to get right now, because they're defending that system for their lives. They know. From the very low levels, you know, when a ship starts to sink, the rats try to get to the top, and the ones at the top will not allow them. So people will get burned. You will see people put through the ringer for this to try and deflect stuff.
Yeah, pieces of meat, you know, hung out for public display. Look at him, he did it all. Don't talk about me, though, you know, I didn't do nothing.
Yeah, don't look over here, look over there. That's basically what it all is.
Yeah.
And that's how childish the arguments become, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's become to a childish argument.
You got to get to this eternal vigilance point. Like, have you ever had somebody lie to you, like straight to your face, kind of thing, and you just let it go? You know that they're lying to you, but you just let it go. What if you didn't let it go? What if every single time they bring out some kind of piece of meat for public display, you go, "Hey, who's getting off as a result of this guy not getting off?" What if you had this eternal suspicion, this eternal vigilance? It'd be pretty difficult, and I think it's impossible to weed corruption entirely out of a society without an equal and opposite tyrannical police state to enforce it, really. And as we all know, enforcement doesn't normally go after the real big bad people who are actually hurting human beings, right? They normally go after the people who are trying to save them.
That's why it's coming down to you, us, me, I. It's you. If you, you know, you can bring wonderful quotes from history back at all these cases. And Gandhi said that be the change that you want in the world. Well, you on your own, you might think you're very insignificant, but you change your world, and the world will change. It's a natural process. You start bringing things like quantum physics into it, where, you know, it's being shown now that the matter that surrounds us through light information, photons and frequency, that's all we interpret. This is all around us, and we interpret it through these five senses. This is about a consciousness. If your consciousness is kept in a little box where you vote Labour because your dad did, and you've never gone, wow, Labour are a bunch of scumbags, then you've never expanded your consciousness on that level. I can't get enough information, Vinny. I want to know everything because I feel that I'm a strong enough person to be able to differentiate my own opinion from something of what is being given to me in an agenda. And I've had long enough of that agenda where I've been asleep, and once you wake up, you can't go back to paying your way in a system that is designed to steal from you. I wouldn't be the man that I wanted to be, and certainly not the man my mum would have wanted me to be. It's all about truth at the end of the day, and justice. You can, you know, if I'd have made mistakes and took a solicitor in and lost this house, then I could blame myself. But to do the legwork and find out that, hang on a minute, you can't do this. But hang on a minute, you're doing it anyway. That's how simple it is. If you could, like I said, you could spend 4 or 5 years learning the civil procedure rules, go into the court and be very confident and to fight them at their own game. But when you don't need to be there because they have no authority to enforce anything on you without your consent, why would you? That is the argument. But the fact is, they won't let you into court to have that argument because they can't hear you.
So, oh my God. It reminds me of so many conversations I've had with people who are real hardcore supporters of New Zealand political parties, who when I start talking about the truth about how their political party actually stands on really crucial issues, they don't and cannot argue and walk away.
Yeah. It's because people have a rhetoric. People pick up opinions, and everybody has other people's opinions inside them. But the one key opinion is what you truly believe. I mean, you could tell me your belief in whatever you want, and I would go, all right, okay, that's your belief. But I don't know where you've got your information. I don't even know if that's your real belief. You know, you take people at face value, but at the end of the day, it's still only information. Some bellend can't take some information and try and do something ridiculously stupid, and because he might have looked at Alex Jones or anything like that, blame and demonise Alex Jones because of this one nutter. Yet that's what you see.
Yeah.
You see that all the time. Well, that one nutter is exactly what it is. It's a nutter. You don't tar me with that brush. I've done my research. I certainly don't. I'm not a placard waver, Vinny.
Yeah.
I'm an aggregator of information. I like to talk about it. I like to get people into conversation.
You might be an aggregator of information. I'm just an aggravator of information to a large degree. And I am a bit of a placard waver, a megaphone loud hailer.
What we need. We need everybody like that.
I think it's like, you know, in the human body, how you got all these different organs doing all these different functions and what have you, and if one of the organs fails, everything's freaking kaput. I think that's how we actually kind of work as a movement and a society and what have you. It's just we've all just got to play our parts, you know. I think it's like if seven different people tell you the same thing, your belief structure on something will change, allegedly. It doesn't mean that you tell the one person the same thing seven times. That's what really frustrates a lot of people who are trying to wake others up, is that actually you can't do it by yourself. You can, however, play your part. And that's all you have to do. That's all your responsibilities are. I mean, what do you think? Did you cause the entire world's problems by yourself? No, then why try and take responsibility for solving all the world's problems by yourself? Take responsibility for the problem that you're in and solve it, and as a result, you will actually, hopefully teach others how to solve those problems in their own lives, and hopefully inspire some form of individual responsibility and have people stop conforming to what authorities want of them. Because the only way that the human race is actually ever going to develop is if everybody starts to learn how to develop themselves without being told how to develop. Okay? How do you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you're under mind control.
Exactly. I question everything, and the thing is, if you wanted to try and be over analytical of this, if you realise that when you came into this world, your biggest teachers are obviously your parents, and you can have those biggest lessons with your parents or in the absence of one or both parents, it doesn't matter. Your learning begins from those parents. They give you something of a foundation. That could be a lack of foundation, or it could be a really solid foundation. But then you go into an environment that we now know is being controlled, the education system. And the best thing that they ever did was train us to keep each other in check by ganging together in tribal gangs and saying, I like Liverpool, I hate United, and vice versa. And then it's because you're too fat, you're too thin, you've got shit trainers. So you've got all this stuff that you're growing through. And it's hard to try and find any truth in that, because you find things and people that you do want to put a belief in. Fortunately, I didn't get any dogma attached to me through a religion. My mum apparently was Methodist. My dad was Church of England. But what that meant to me was I went to a certain school. You know, even though I've read religion and I've obviously we had to do it at school, but it was cartoon characters for me at that stage. It was boring. I wasn't interested in this rubbish. And it was because it was religion, it was rubbish. It wasn't spiritual. The teachings of all the religions that are now in fights with each other or in dispute with each other, fundamentally at the damn core, is love. It all teaches love. It's just been taken control of, and it's been indoctrinated, and people think that they've got to go somewhere to say prayers or whatever on a certain day at a certain time. That is a control aspect. And for me, the best thing for me was when things start getting stripped down, when you start having these attacks on you and everything, it's like the army breaks somebody into pieces. Now, from that, you can mould them into whatever you like. Some people aren't strong enough to go through these breakdowns.
It's called trauma-based mind control. You know how they do it? Sleep deprivation and silo mentality. Group punishment. All right. And that way you lose your individuality, you lose your ability to think, and then you get told this is the person you now have to follow, now that you're no longer an individual and you can't think for yourself because you're too freaking tired. Does the medical profession and law students ever complain about a lack of sleep? And do they ever somehow react to protect their entire profession when you critique one little bit of it? It's because they, too, just like a soldier, have been subjected to trauma-based mind control because they're trying to insert and program them with something. Something that prevents them, intellectually speaking, from having an individual idea to a large degree and standing up for what is right against what the collective punishment ideal would instill in them.
Exactly. I mean, it's when you speak to some solicitors, and like I said, the solicitor who I spoke with for at quite a length, he said to me at the end of that conversation that in 27 years he hadn't heard anything ever like that, that I had spent an hour coaching him on the difference between legal and lawful, and he advised me to go and get my degree and become a solicitor. And I said to him, I said, I would rather keep hold of my soul, thank you very much. he took it as I meant it, which was a joke, because he actually, what he is, a negotiator, but he thinks that this court, he really thinks this court has authority because of the civil procedure rules. And that's all they are rules. And as with rules, if you don't consent to the rule, then how can they enforce it? They can't, because it's a rule. And the more and more rules that are passed, the more and more ridiculous they are becoming. Yeah. I mean, over in this country now, they're trying to pass legislation to stop kids running in playgrounds. Now, what's the point to that?
Yeah.
What's the point?
It's just this over-micromanagement, you know.
Exactly. I mean, but this is how quickly it's changed, isn't it? Late 70s, early 80s, something like that, I was in the school playground and there was several stacks of iron bars stacked up in the corner of the playground. In a playground, no health and safety in those days and all this rubbish, one of those bars got pushed over and it put a hole in my leg. Not one time did I ever hear my mother or father say, we're going to sue the school. They accepted it as an accident and moved on. That was the society then. Then in the mid to late 80s came in word was blamed as a claim, where the American system had shown how they could expand this trough and let all the little piggies come and have a bit as well. You know, they're not very good solicitors. The ones who were just cutting the teeth, the ones who were going to have to prove themselves to get dirty, to get promoted to a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are not going up this system. Don't get me wrong. No, I can't say everybody, but this system, you are not going to get promoted to the highest.
If you're still a good person, yeah.
Yeah, without being a little bit of dirt on your hands.
Yeah. And you may not even be doing anything illegal. However, just because something's illegal doesn't make it moral. All right? Yeah. There are things that you just do to somebody which is really unfair, and it's a raw deal, but it's legal. And I think Mark Passio talked about, and two favourite words of mine since, is moral obligation. What do you have a moral obligation to do? Is it to, I don't know, kick innocent people out of their homes and onto the street? Is it to starve out poor families? Is it to enact legislation that decreases the amount of education that people seem to go through so they're incapable of knowing their own rights or even what it is to be human? What is your moral obligation? What is it that you're trying to contribute to society here? I find myself asking myself this constantly because I'm always worried that I'll become so full of myself that I'll forget what I'm here to do.
That's possible. I've seen a lot of it. That's what seems to create a lot of the arguments, these egos. Now, you know, if you've got an ego and you get into this type of stuff and you're wanting to have a bit of fame and a bit of recognition because you're lacking in something inside yourself that you need that boost, you need to be put on that pedestal, then you're almost as part of the problem because you're a very useful tool to muddy waters when people are genuinely trying to find the right answers. In the same way that if you're going down the stream of information with everybody else and you get snagged on a rock, and then all of a sudden you say, no, this is it, and we're all moving forward saying, we can't help you, you need to come with us, you need to come and look at other stuff. That's just more knowledge. That's an argument for another day. But people say, this works, this is the only way it works. Mm. And that is one of the reasons why they managed to catch so many people out. Like the stuff what I was talking about, the prepaid accounts, we know that it exists, but we can't prove it. If you go into a court and say, I've got a prepaid account, the only thing the judge needs to say to you is, what's the account number? And you can't hear that. Suddenly you sound like Hugh Grant, because you can't answer the question. And it's the same with the argument of, if you just go in and use an argument of, my signature creates that money. The question is, well, why did you go to the bank? Why didn't you just sign a piece of paper and go and buy your house? So your arguments have got to be correct, but we wouldn't be halfway near where we are now if those people hadn't gone with those arguments and tried them and failed, because we learn from that. It's a mixture of stuff. You've got to know something about the stuff, but like I said to you on the last show, Vinny, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants in this arena. I haven't come along and suddenly picked up a torch or put a kilt on and painted my face and shouted freedom. That's not what I've done. This has all come after me. So I've researched and I've taken information from many, many, many different facets.
Mm.
And you put together what feels right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's actually a good positive place to leave it. Now, Paul, do you have a website or Facebook contact or something of that nature that you can give out to the listeners?
I haven't, no. I have got a website, but it's
still a Paul Webster site.
It's still under construction. Like I said, Vinny, I don't have chance to get... Like, I was thinking of maybe doing some kind of a podcast for myself, but I'm spending so much time researching this stuff right now. It takes up a lot of my time when I'm not at work.
Mm.
So to try and fit anything else in, it's difficult, but to be able to get a chance to get on a platform where more people are seeing me on an international radio, so it doesn't matter how big, how small, it's bigger than the people I bump into in Asda or somewhere like that. It's a platform to take my information to the next level. And it's like you said before, you can only do your bit.
Yeah.
My bit is not, at this moment in time, my bit is not to have a flagship radio station and be interviewing people like Max Egan, David Icke, and all these other people who are at my level, digging and chipping away. That's not my thing at the minute. My thing is to actually amass this information, but then put it out there, and people will say, that information's good, that's not too good, that's not what I believe.
It opens the debate, at least. You know,
yes.
I'm really sick of the media never having a real debate.
It's a public debate we want.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. All right, and if we want a public debate, we've got to make the information public, don't you think? And
exactly.
I think that's
exactly
what...
I would say so. I think it's a good idea, that.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? You know. All right, Paul Webster, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. And bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is an entirely listener-supported broadcast for the time being. So if you support the idea of helping people who do the real work at the coalface get the word out about all different sorts of things that they're doing, so that people can perhaps have some kind of a public debate and actually talk and be informed for a change, unlike mainstream media, then go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and either donate or start up an automatic payment. All right, there's a business idea that, you know, in those restaurants you go into and they don't tell you what the price of the food is, you pay whatever it is you think that food is worth, and that's the methodology by which you would donate to the show. You're not donating to me, you're not obligating me, you're not paying me to do anything. You're simply saying, Vinny, what you're doing is the right thing, and this is how much I support you in what you're doing for everybody. Okay, that's basically what I'm here to do. I'm a servant, I'm a slave, but I don't have a master other than my higher self, and doing what's right, doing what I feel is the right thing to do. So, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again sometime.
You are the only exception. You are the only exception.